Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
Maybe it just collapsed on its own.
We can't take that chance.
You always say that. I want to take a chance.
And Alex.
So good, made you want to slap your mama. Don't it, Willie?
Yeah, boy. Hey, mama.
What the hell you want with...
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony of Comic Conversations, the podcast that reviews more comics than anybody else. Episode 190, where we talk all things comics for the week of April 19th, 2017. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
All right. All right, let's waste no more time and let's go straight into our first segment this week, news.
Make up your mind. Decide to walk with me around the lake tonight. Around the lake tonight. By my side.
See, I didn't say anything this week.
Good song.
I know. I think the last couple times you had an opportunity to pick out a song, I made fun of you for your taste of it, because, you know, you tend to lean towards indie music, and I was like, eh, indie nerd, hipster.
Well, I'm either going with modern indie music or old alternative rock.
Well, there you go. That is Toadies with Possum Kingdoms. All right, let's go into our first news story. So, a story I'm sure you're going to love to hear about this, Alex. Editor-in-chief Axel Alonso is teasing that something in the pages of Marvel Legacy will break the internet. That's the appropriate reaction, I feel.
I'm so... You know what pisses me off about this?
They haven't learned anything, and they keep trying to hotshot stuff.
You remember how just like a week ago... We heard about how after Secret Empire there wouldn't be any like big crossovers for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
They've already announced another one.
What do you mean?
That's what this is.
No.
Yeah, it is.
It's not a crossover.
Why was it not?
There's no tie-ins involved.
Oh, so it's just a big event.
You know about this, though, so you
they
can't...
They said no events.
You can't act like this is a secret that just popped out of nowhere.
Such bullshit, though. It's like, just stop. Just write your comics and tell your stories, fuckers.
Well, it's
and it's not going to break the fucking internet. Nobody cares. You already killed everyone. You already changed all the characters. What are you going to do, fucking change them all back and pretend all the bullshit you've been producing didn't happen?
That's presumably what this thing is supposed to be.
Well, that's not going to break the internet. It's just going to make them happy. And by the way, I got a feeling on this. They're looking at what DC did and they're like, oh, DC's bringing back old stuff. So, like, we should do that. And it's like, here's the thing, Marvel. You don't really have the history DC has. Like, you never completely wrecked your continuity 50 times, and then once so badly that you had to do a big storyline to undo it all.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel never did that. So if they think going back to original numbering, that's going to work, it's like, it's not. You guys change the numbering on a yearly basis, and it doesn't do anything.
I heard some people speculating that it could be the return of the FF.
That's not going to break anything. The FF, their last two, three comics didn't sell for shit.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Fantastic Four if written by someone good, but God, I'm just so annoyed with Marvel right now.
They're trying too hard. Well, I think Marvel, you talked about bringing back the old stuff. I think Marvel will be the first to say, oh, we were the ones who did that first because we brought back what's called Secret Wars, and we did a Clone Saga again.
Yeah, but it's... I don't know. I just, you know what was good when somebody brought old stuff back?
I don't know. What?
Morrison's Batman run. When he found a way to fit in, like, Batmite and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but in a logical way. that was cool. But just bringing stuff back to bring it back, it's like, people didn't really like Clone Saga.
Well, that's why I think, Sly insisted it be called Dead No More, because he just wanted to, stay as far away as he can from the clone name, but I think the marketing department decided to put clone in there, and I think the compromise was Clone Conspiracy, because I think the marketing department originally wanted to call it Clone Saga, and they had to taper that back, and they agreed on the Clone Conspiracy name.
Yeah, but we all knew what it was.
Well, the thing is, remember we saw all the solicitations for it, and it was always called Dead No More, and then as soon as it started, it was called Clone Conspiracy.
Yeah. That was the compromise?
Yeah. I still can't make heads or tails of what this is ultimately going to be.
Gonna say, like, what would have happened? Like, would Slot have left the book?
No, but it's one of these things that I think they both have to be on board, or Marvel wants them to play nice, or whatever.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, we got to keep Dan Slott on to write that book for another 15 years. Dan Slott's, like, good on that book, but, like, honestly, I have been... not ever so slowly losing interest in Spider-Man.
That could be just cyclical, because it's like, who's to say if they put somebody else on, it'll be any good?
Well, yeah, but right now it's like I'm just bored. Like, and it's like he's not a bad writer, but I don't care. I think I'm burnt out on Spider-Man.
I think
I've read too many Spider-Man books.
I'm fine with the series, but I know you've communicated that for quite a while. Now, I've even contemplated saying, hey, you want to drop Spider-Man?
I don't think anything important's going to happen.
Well, as I've said before, I have my hills to die on, and Spider-Man's certainly not going to be that.
I don't know yet. I'll see how bad it, or if it gets bad, or not incredibly boring.
I will say this. I don't think, no matter who they put in the title, I don't think it's ever going to run the risk of being canceled.
Unlike the next story.
Where we have the confirmation of both Star-Lord and Nova being canceled.
Yeah, and I believe there are a few other books, but we couldn't get the names in time. Star-Lord, you wanted to stop reading it almost immediately. I still liked it, but I stopped reading it just to cut down on...
I was disappointed because this is Chip Zdarsky, the guy who just wrapped up Howard the Duck. I was really high on the run. I was hoping this would be, obviously with a different character, but it'd be more of that quality writing, that awesome humor, and I was just like, eh. Like, and I was willing to give it a second issue because I was like, okay, maybe just not out the gate really good, but let's give it a second issue. And by the second issue, I was done. And I didn't put my foot down, but this is the one that I lobbied to you. I'm like, can we just drop this? I don't want to read this anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, I still liked it in the second issue, but it wasn't amazing or anything. And a part of this could be, like, if you like Guardians of the Galaxy, it's not really selling like it used to. And if you look at the history of Guardians spinoffs, they get a million and none of them do well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Venom has had two canceled comics. Rocket has had two canceled comics. I don't know if anyone else even got a book, or Drax was canceled.
Nova's had many cancellations. And we were just talking last week how much we enjoyed the new Nova saga and the new Nova approach to storytelling.
No, I don't know what the problem with Nova is. I mean, the thing is, Nova keeps getting these books, and, like, we didn't like the last series, but a lot of people did. Like, a lot of people put them over. And the new one came out, and I thought they finally hit on something, because they had, you know, they had the kid, and there are a lot of kid superheroes right now, so I could see where that would get a little old. But then they had Richard Rider back, which people have been asking for, but, I mean, again... comic fans ask for things and then they don't buy it. So, no one to blame but yourselves.
And as far as the going back to nostalgia thing and the Marvel Legacy thing, it's like, that's another character. Richard Rider, they said this, they wanted the character back and they brought it back and nobody bought it.
Yeah, it just seems like, I think the thing is, like, they replaced Richard Rider with Sam Alexander and it wasn't like a big deal. It was just like, oh, there's Nova, now there's a new Nova. All right. It's not like DC where, you know, a hero, a young hero is the sidekick for like decades, and then he finally takes over the mantle and people are ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really do that. I don't know. I've always got the feeling that Marvel just feels like it has less history than DC, even though a lot of these characters have been around for like 50, 60 years.
And it's just the thing is,
you don't feel it.
Yeah, and they're the quality of their history, I would say, as far as it's not like DC where it's like a patchwork of so many things that went wrong or so many bad decisions. Where it's Marvel, you could question things here and there, especially when you're talking One More Day. But for the most part, there hasn't been anything super controversial when it comes to their past. Maybe the Clone Saga as well. But other than that, like, I can't think of anything really in the Marvel. Well, I guess now I'm thinking another thing, Heroes Reborn. There's been thing here and there, but there hasn't.
Yeah, but they undid Heroes Reborn pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And all the other thing to note is, when Heroes Reborn happened, the only thing anybody cared about in Marvel was X-Men and Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Like, the Avengers were not a big deal. Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, these characters were not important in Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
They were secondary. Like, whereas even to this day, I don't want to get into it because we're going to review it, but there were some glaring character omissions in Secret Empire, and I questioned it because of what those characters are. In the old days, they'd have a big X-Men crossover where the X-Men were doing all kinds of shit. You never said, where are the Avengers? Because nobody cared.
Yeah.
Like, the Avengers are so probably true, hanging out wearing jackets.
Uh-huh. I'm sure our old host Dave will take you to task for that.
If he listened to our show, he would be furiously composing a tweet. Dear sirs, the jacket era was amazing.
Hey,
I have read every issue of Avengers.
Who's that? Whose voice are you doing? That doesn't sound like Dave.
Oh, actually, once I finished watching my Purisoo and my new anime about women who all date a Cuban man from Florida, I will let you know that the jacket version of the Avengers is the best version of the Avengers. Sirs. That's a reveal, isn't it? I've never done the Dave impression.
I don't know if you've done it on the show. I know when we've talked on Skype, you've used it a lot, but I'm not sure if you have done it on the show.
My Asian girlfriend told me that the Avengers with jackets is her favorite run.
Wow. Maybe this is a good time to mention, I don't know, I'm not sure if he listens or not, but if this is the first one he listens to in a long time, I think he's going to stop listening. All right, in our final Marvel news story anyway, the guy who will not go away, the X-Men Gold artist, Adrian CF, he's now offering $3,000 for an original art of the X-Men Gold that he drew. This guy will just not go away.
Now, so I know this guy, like, is kind of an anti-Semite, but I become more and more of a fan of his the more I learn. It's like he's out of comics, but he's got these pages from this controversial comic. And he's going to get everything he can for this before he's out of the business. Do you think he's going to draw comics for, like, hardcore fundamentalist Muslim magazines or something? They must exist.
He has to now. Like, I can't imagine. He's going to be, like, their biggest champion now.
I don't know if the Arab world works in the same way as, say, Mexico,
mm-hmm.
where, like, you know, a Mexican does something and gets in trouble for it, and then, like, Del Rio, like, he's not really good.
Alberto Del Rio?
Yeah, he got fired because of racism, basically, and then he becomes a hero.
Mm-hmm.
I think due to the fact that Muslims are not a country, they are a disparate group of people who come from different countries, you cannot actually become a hero in all those countries. However, This guy was where was he from? The Philippines?
Indonesia.
Indonesia, okay. He might be a hero in Indonesia among his group.
Well, he's already confirmed in the time since the last update. He's confirmed that he was actually in attendance of the 212 rally in Indonesia, calling for the arrest, jailing, and this is what I found out, for the arrest, jailing, and decapitation of the Christian governor.
What is it with the decapitation thing?
I don't know,
because you're aware of the terror, they put out the videos of them, like, cutting the guy's heads off.
Yeah, and here's the thing, I'm looking
at... shoot him?
Huh?
Can you just shoot them? Do we have any Muslim listeners who can tell us, is there any religious significance to chopping someone's head off? Is that better than shooting them?
Or hanging them or anything else?
Yeah, just anything. Like, I'm wondering, like, is it the shock factor? Like, you cut their head off and a bunch of blood squirts out or something?
Is historic significant in the, you know, in the faith, the Muslim faith? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, because I don't know a lot about decapitation, but I imagine it's like in Mortal Kombat, where if you take somebody's head off, fucking blood's just coming out like a gusher out of their neck hole. Because that's what used to happen in Mortal Kombat when you punch somebody's head off.
And I'm sure that was based on reality, right?
Well, I mean, they got it from somewhere, right? Don't you have like the big giant vein in your neck, right?
Yeah.
And if you cut it, the person will always die.
You could answer this by watching a decapitation.
Oh, I don't want to do that, though.
Yeah, neither do I, but you have so many questions. I'm like, well.
You're right. I'm going to look this up. We can continue with the news.
Here's the thing I noticed, too. I'm looking at the bleedingcool.com story. And one thing they mentioned was, it was funny that this happened in the same book, and the 212 popped out when they showed Kitty Pryde as the leader of the X-Men. It's like, oh, my God. I didn't realize there was a connection there.
Wait, what?
Okay. So part of the 212 protesting was the wanting the removal of the Christian governor, right? Because of their faith, right?
Yeah.
Well, who just so happened to be leading the X-Men?
Storm?
No. In X-Men Gold issue 1?
Oh, leading. Yeah, it was Kitty.
Well, there you go. Maybe that's what set this all off from the beginning, when he found out that Kitty Pryde was going to be leading the X-Men.
Right, don't think so. I think it was just the timing.
All right, let's stop talking about the redheaded stepchild of comic books right now. Let's talk about everybody's favorite, at least for now. Let's talk DC. DC announced I don't know how to put this, because they're emphasizing that it's not an imprint. But everything I read about this and all the facts about this seem to point towards a new imprint. They're launching a new, what they're calling, banner. It's called Dark Matter. It's going to start with a single issue, and it's going to lead into a bunch of new series, namely Sideways by writers Dan Diodato and Justin Jordan, artist Kenneth Rutherford, The Silencer by Dan Abnett and artist John Romita Jr., Immortal Men by James, let's see if I can pronounce this, Tyron the Fourth, artist Jim Lee, Damage by Robert Venditti and artist Tony S. Daniel. And here's one that I find interesting, because I actually know this one. New Challengers by Scott Snyder and artist Andy Kubert.
Okay, so what this tells me is this is an imprint, and it's that's scary. It's artist-focused.
Yeah, it's the 90s all over again.
Yeah, that's not really good. I mean, there were some names on there.
Well, it makes sense when you consider the person who's helming all this is Jim Lee.
He wants to bring his glory days back. Well, Jim, your art is really fucking boring and has been for years now, so you're not really the one to lead the charge here. But you know what? When your editor-in-chief is an artist who came from the time period when artists were, you know, the gods of comics, whatever.
Well, my only thing is, why is Jim Lee in such a powerful position when he's just an artist?
Well, he ran Wildstorm, and technically, if you look at it, he did a really good job with Wildstorm. Mm-hmm. Like, he brought Alan Moore back into the fold. He is largely responsible for Warren Ellis becoming a big star.
I'm saying none of that is creatively. It's nothing.
It was. He he hired the people to do those books.
Okay, okay, but then how does that translate
as
an
editor?
Yeah.
The editor-in-chief who is largely responsible for who works on books?
Okay, you got a point there, but then explain to me how he deserves his own imprint. Even though it's not being called imprint, it's called a banner.
Ball well, because he, I mean, he already had his own imprint, and Jim Lee is a name. Like, he has been proven to sell comic books. So, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I don't have any particular interest in it. I mean, they are using existing characters.
I feel like everyone's learning the wrong lessons from DC Rebirth.
Well, we don't know. I mean, they put Abnett on something, and Scott Snyder is a name writer. I don't like him, but he's a name writer.
Yeah, but still, it's like, I don't know. It's like they got
Valiant Guy in there.
They seem to think, well, he's the one that writes Green Lantern, so he's not exactly a newbie. My only thing is, it seems like they're thinking, oh, the 90s are back. Let's do stuff that heavily focuses on the artist. And it's like, no, the DC Rebirth is good because basically people want the DC characters and they didn't like what you're doing with New 52.
It is different.
In what way?
It's different from what everyone has been doing. Cause the business for years now, to its benefit, I think, has been very focused on creative, on the stories. We haven't focused on art at that level for a long time.
And here's another question I have, I'll follow up to it. What's the point of it other than it's probably a Jim Lee pet project? Is this something to, I don't know, to lure artists away and hopefully they'll want to stay at DC and not go off to Image?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think Jim Lee just had an idea and they said, hey, our books are selling good. We could put more books out. How could we sell them? Oh, let's put big name artists on them with sort of name writers.
Yeah, but you have the DC Rebirth imprint. You have Young Animal. You have Wildstorm. And now you're cranking out Dark Knights?
It's not called Dark Knights.
Oh, Dark Matter, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if the market can support all these books.
Well, that's what you do. You flood the market until it no longer supports, and then you drop the low-hanging fruit. I mean, it's a strategy. They're owned by Warner Brothers, dude. They have the money to do it.
Do you think this is any kind of retaliation behind what Marvel's deciding to do, or they're just...
I don't think they need to. DC's the market leader right now.
Yeah, but, you know, you kick a guy when he's down, because presumably that's the easiest time to do it, when they can't fight back.
No, because it's not...
Because really...
Marvel's not doing new imprints. I mean, that always has kind of been a DC thing. Like, Marvel had Max, which... It wasn't really, it was never like Vertigo. It wasn't a separate imprint. Back in the day, they had.
Oh, that's another thing they're doing. Vertigo as well. They rolled that out, I think, like 2 years ago.
Yeah, but Vertigo never left. It was always around. They just put more of a focus on it. DC is, I'm telling you, DC's always done this. I think DC owned, when they bought Wildstorm for a long time, they kept Wildstorm as a separate imprint. They had, I don't know if DC did Milestone or not, but then they always had Vertigo. So DC's always had the separate imprints, but Marvel never really has. So I don't think it's a response. It's just DC being DC.
Let me try to explain it in a way that that we can relay, especially when we're talking about our show. Ever since DC Rebirth, it's felt like I struggled to try to fit all these books on our list. I wonder if with these new... Dark Matter books, if we're going to be reviewing even less and less Marvel. Or even less and less Image. It's like, it's going to be... We only have so many books that we can read in a given week. I wonder if at what point, how many of the books that we read in a weekly basis are going to just be in some way, shape, or form DC.
None of those books you name sound particularly interesting to me. So I don't know if I'm going to be... really wanting to read any of them?
Some of them sound good. I wouldn't mind reading the Challengers of the Unknown series. And we've always liked Robert Venditti and Dan Abnett.
Yeah, but that's like Well, yeah, I mean, I want to see what they do with it, because Challenge of the Unknown always struck me as like a half-assed Fantastic Four.
Even though, don't they predate the Fantastic Four?
Yeah, but nobody gave a shit about them. They've never been over.
Mm. And with Scott Snyder doing it, you have to imagine it's going to be a big deal.
Oh, Scott Snyder's writing that one?
Yeah.
Oh, I have no interest in it.
You like that one Image series he's doing with Lemire, where he's the artist.
Scott Snyder is the artist?
No, Lemire is the artist on that Image series, whatever it's called, AD After Death. You like that
I thought
series?
Lemire was writing that.
No, he's writing Royal City. I think you're confused because he's the artist on both those books, and they have very similar art. But AD After Death is Scott Snyder.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do like that.
Did I just trick you into liking Scott Snyder?
Yeah, I didn't realize he wrote that. I guess I just don't like his Batman. I didn't like The Wake either.
Oh, okay. Hey, since we're talking Batman, let's talk our final news story. Hulu debuted a trailer for something they're calling Batman and Bill.
This is interesting, actually, because it's been kind of a somewhat often mentioned story that Bill Finger is the real creator of Batman.
As a new comic book reader, I'm like, oh, DC has their own Stan Lee too?
It's not quite the same, because Bob Kane didn't do that many books. Like, he was nowhere near as important to DC as Stan Lee was to Marvel. Mm. But, yeah, it's just, like, all the... You didn't see, like, in the Batman movies... I don't know if you did in the new ones. You might have. You didn't see, like... Batman created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger. It was always just created by Bob Kane.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the artist was co-creator, and depending on, you know, who you listen to, he was the creator.
The sole creator is what you're saying.
Yes, that's been suggested. So I'm interested to see who they spoke to and what they could find out. I mean, DC obviously has a vested interest in keeping Bob Kane as a creator for whatever reason. So I don't know if they could actually talk to anyone there. But,
I wonder if we'll ever get this kind of documentary series on Stan Lee. Or is it one of those things where the horse has left the barn door and nobody cares anymore? I think also part of it is, too, Marvel has since made nice with the Kirby family, whereas I don't know how much money the Finger estate has got.
I mean, I've read it, but it's like in comic circles.
Mm.
So.
All right, there you go. That's going to do it for this week's news. Let's move on to our next segment, this week's books. Good luck.
Slippy.
What's that?
Fuck you, Slippy. Shit.
He was always annoying, even as far as back to the Super Nintendo era. That's obviously the Corneria theme from the first Star Fox on Super Nintendo. Ugh, he's always been terrible. Fox, help me!
Why was it always him?
Because he's a nerd.
Like, why is he... Okay, Star Fox is like this... What are they? They're like a pilot... Like,
they're a mercenary force.
I thought Star Wolf was mercenaries, and they were... Because they had a general directing.
No, because the thing has always been... Especially, I know this because I've played Star Fox 64 recently. At the end, they wind up charging the military. They send them a bill. So they're, in fact, a private... private army.
Okay, so if they are mercenaries, then they can have anyone they want on their team.
Mm-hmm.
Why the fuck would they put Slippy Frog?
Slippy Toad, excuse me.
Sorry, Slippy Toad.
Excuse me, this is Dave chiming in to Comic Conversation.
Actually,
Slippy Toad is very popular in his native land, the Nihonbon. He is often compared to Gojira.
If you knew anything about the fox mythology, the fox lore, you would know he designed the R-Wing and he's their technical director.
Is he? Is that seriously the story?
Yeah, he's supposed to be the one that makes all the stuff.
So they put him at... He's obviously a terrible pilot, though. So they put him at risk by... I don't understand.
Well, what that game was severely lacking, though, I will say this of the Super Nintendo game. No, Peppy telling you to do a barrel roll.
Peppy did not tell you to do a barrel roll.
Which is a crime.
And Peppy was the old, like, grizzled rabbit, right?
Yeah.
He was cool. I always liked Falco because he just seemed like a badass. Like, he'd be like, fuck you, Fox, I'm going in. They should have had him cuss. That's what that's what Nintendo should do. Make the character adult.
As long as we're talking Pep, going back to the members of Star Fox, I recently played the GameCube version of it, and they retired Peppy. Like, they replaced him with that female fox from the Dinosaur Planet game.
I never played that one. Yeah, they retired Peppy and replaced him with a woman?
Yes.
A woman?
I like the YouTube series, Fox in Space, where the common misconception is everyone walks up to Fox McCloud and be like, oh my god, I can't believe it, it's Star Fox! He's like, Star Fox is the name of my team. My name is Fox McCloud.
Oh, that's one of the lesser used things you say in World of Warcraft trade chat to troll people. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, Star Fox is my favorite Nintendo character. That one goes along with, why does Zelda always have to save the princess? Every time somebody will get it. Or, you know why they call it an Xbox 360? Because you look at it, you turn around 360 degrees, walk out the room. And then there's always that guy who goes, that's 180 degrees. Mine was always, girls don't play WoW. And then everyone will tell you, like, oh, I'm a girl or my girlfriend plays.
It's funny because your wife plays, but you...
Well, she hasn't been. She wants her own account.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, just like World of Warcraft, let's Leroy Jenkins is up. All right, let's go into this week's books, which include Generation Zero Issue 9, Redneck 1, Royal City 2, Injection 12, Eclipse 6, Descender 21, Black Hammer 8, Archie 19, Thunderbolts 12, Punisher 11, Miss Marvel 17, Moon Knight 13, Secret Empire 0, Wildstorm 3, Astro City 43, Super Sons 3, Superman 21, Aquaman 21, Justice League 19, and to open up this week's books, we have Batman 21, writer Tom King, art by Jason Fabuc. The Button Part 1.
We're really opening with this?
Yeah.
It's like the biggest book of the week. What are you hearing? Yeah. Insane. So, first of all, this is a good comic. Mm-hmm. It did a lot of interesting things too. They are so just blatantly like they're in this. They're like, okay, we're not actually going to tell you anything about Watchmen, mm-hmm. but we're going to open it up with like an issue like Watchmen. And then we're going to style the panels as if it was Watchmen, which like they did the three panels per line thing that Watchmen did. And the book opens up with a tight close-up of something, which pulls away to reveal more of what it is, and then pulls away to reveal even more. Like, so much of this book was just taken directly from Watchmen. Even the fight, like, it was Tom King had fun with this, is what I got out of it.
And here's the thing I had fun with, because some of my friends and some of our friends on the board, they're still not, they don't know what to make of Tom King, because they're like, well, we're going to be a fan of Snyder, like some of the stuff he did. I don't know how I feel about Tom King. I really haven't heard that much about him. It's in this book, I felt like he finally, this was kind of his sort of his coming out party, because even though he's done Batman for quite a while now, I feel like a lot of people still haven't been reading. But yeah, this absolutely blew me away. This is the reason why Tom King is writing Batman. There's a lot of good people in comic books, but if I had to make a short list of the best people right now in comic books, Tom King's got to be on top, close to the top of the list.
I love Tom King, but since I'm bringing up the way the panels were structured and stuff so much, art was fantastic in this.
So that's a big shoot. Shout out to the artist, Jason Fabuc.
Yeah, just absolutely fantastic. I had complaints about a lot of art in this month's comics, and this was not one of them. You could understand everything that was going on at every point. He mixed it up. In a way, he might have felt he was kind of hamstrung because he had to structure this as if it were an issue of Watchmen. So he couldn't really do what he wanted to do, you think, unless he was really hyped about this and thought it was cool, which, given the art he turned in here, I think that might have been true because it was very good. The core of the story is we open up with Saturn Girl in Arkham, and she starts freaking out because they're watching this hockey game. The hockey game.
Oh, God.
Continues throughout the series. She's freaking out, like, you know, no, this is the one where he kills him, and then starts screaming about how Superman and the Legion are going to die, and they come and they, you know, probably shoot her full of something and drag her away. And then we go to Batman, and Batman, of course, since this is a Watchmen comic, has all the screens up with mostly with the bloody button, but also with, you know, Batman's watching the hockey game too. And he's got the button and he's looking at it and he throws it down on the table and it lands next to Psycho Pirate's mask. And as it lands, like, sparks appear between the two. And then Thomas Wayne, the Batman from Flashpoint, appears briefly. And Bruce is like, Dad? And then he disappears. He calls Flash to tell him, like, hey, that button thing we've been working on since Rebirth that we haven't mentioned until now. I just had some kind of reaction with Psycho Pirate's mask. You should get over here. He's like, all right, I'll be there in a minute. God, by the way, the timer counting down was a Watchmen element, too.
Ah.
I'm
curious to see how the button, what it has any relation to the Psycho Pirate's mask, because that's the one that was questioned. Okay, like, what does that mean exactly?
I've told you before, Psycho Pirate, he was the guy who remembered that, he was the only guy who remembered that Crisis happened.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably he would have remembered Flashpoint too.
Ah, okay.
Like, Wally remembers it, so it's not as big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, Psycho Pirate, because of the mask or whatever, he always remembers these reality-altering events. So that's why it's just them telling you something's fucked up. Well, Reverse Flash, who is dead, declared in the last issue of, was it Batman or was it Flash? It was Flash, wasn't it?
What happened?
The Reverse Flash.
That, I believe, was, like, in the last issue of... Yeah, you're right. I don't know. It may have... It makes more sense for it to be Flash.
Yeah, it was in one of the comics. Well, he was upset that Thomas Wayne killed him, so he was going to kill his son. So he appears in the Batcave to fight Batman, and they have a wonderfully drawn fight, which features, among other things, Batman fucking... taking a batarang and jamming it into his foot so he couldn't run, so he could pound the shit out of him. That was cool. But, you know, Reverse Flash is beating on him, and he's like, oh, why are you even trying to fight me? You don't have to do this. And he's like, I don't need to beat you. I just need a minute to pass.
Yeah, and that's because, when the countdown came down. Because
Flash told him he'd be there in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So this amazing fight all took place in less than a minute.
Well, it's not really a fight. It was one-sided pounding.
Yeah, but what ended up happening was Reverse Flash, he's got Batman beaten down, and he walks away, and then there's a blue flash of light, and he disappears. And then he reappears, and half of his body is pretty much melted away. And he says, I saw God. And then he dies, and he looks like Barry Allen from Crisis when he died.
Mm-hmm.
Only half his body, but that's what he looks like. and Flash kind of got there to find Batman pretty much unconscious on the floor and Reverse Flash, who he, I don't know if he knows him, but he thought was dead, at least if he does know him, half decomposed on his floor.
God, and the blue light that seems to point all the signs to Dr. Manhattan. I'm like,
yeah, he had like blue energy coming off of him when he was melting, and he referred to him as God. So, but then the preview for the next thing, it said, who killed Reverse Flash? We're not going to find out this is Dr. Manhattan in this book. They're going to save it for something bigger. So, but given how close the visual ties were to Watchmen, I don't think it can all be a swerve.
That's what I'm wondering. Modern comics has sort of taught me that it has to be some kind of swerve, but it would be nice if it was just what it looked like it was.
This Watchmen shit is getting stronger. I don't know if you caught it in Superman, but it was fucking heavy in that too. They're just dropping it in more and more books. Like Justice League this month, they were talking about the bigger threat that's coming, the ultimate threat, and it's just they're dropping these hints everywhere. This one is more blatant.
It's funny because it all started really slow because most of the books did nothing with it, with the maybe the only exception being Titans. And then you saw stuff in Superman, and now we're seeing stuff in Flash and Batman. And now it seems like it's really starting to come way now where it's starting to find its way into more and more books.
Yeah, it's working. And that's the thing. And it's, I don't care how much Alan Moore wants to bitch. This is different from before Watchmen, though, because before Watchmen was taking Moore's stories and then being like, oh, we're going to do prequels to it. This is just taking characters DC owns and transplanting them into modern day DC. It is different.
Mm.
They own these characters.
I never understand why people like Alan Moore complain. It's like, you knew what you were signing up for. How can you sit there and complain how they're using your – when they're not your character?
When they did before Watchmen, he felt that by going back and doing stories to something I wrote in the 80s that was very much of its time, DC is proving they are creatively bankrupt because they're still having to milk stories I did years ago.
I wouldn't say they're creatively bankrupt, but
they kind of were, though, because if you remember, before Watchmen came out the same time as the New 52, and having read a lot of the New 52 books, they did not have a lot going for them at the time.
You could argue they're milking Watchmen now, and you can make that same argument that they're creatively bankrupt. I think it's more so.
No, you can't, because again, those stories were meant to precede Watchmen, so the characters were all the same.
Yeah, but
we haven't even seen the characters yet. And if the big villain here is Doc Manhattan, he is not being used the same way he was used in Watchmen. He is a different character. If Mr. Oz is Ozymandias, he is not the same as he was in Watchmen. They're basically just taking the characters, but they're doing something different with them. And there's also the fact that we might be speaking too soon because we don't even know if they're these characters. It's everyone's assuming.
And since we're talking parallel universes and whatnot, who's to say these aren't Alan Moore's Watchmen and these are a different take on Watchmen?
I think they would be the same. Well, sort of. I'll wait until we get to Superman and talk about that. But if it's Doc Manhattan, he pretty much said he was leaving and going somewhere. But, I mean, the Ozymandias character gave no indication that he wants to leave his Earth and go off with Doc Manhattan and fuck around in other dimensions.
Mm.
Like, that, you know, it was never hinted at, so.
Well, as long as we're talking about hints, you've been hinting at it almost from the word go. Let's talk Superman issue 21, writer Peter J. Tomasi, art by Doug Mankey.
Okay, first of all, apart from the Watchmen stuff I saw, this comic was really fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've been putting Superman over strongly enough.
Well, the thing I try to explain to a lot of folks is Superman and action comics to an extent, sometimes it's good if they have a really good story. Obviously, the last two arcs have been really good. So as of late, Superman's been on a roll as of late. But there's been times where, you know, the last couple story arcs before that I didn't much care for. And I think we were even contemplating not reading Superman anymore. But they did the last storyline with Rebirth. So it kind of got me interested in it again. So.
Yeah, I don't know if he's just hitting his stride or what, but I fucking loved this book. So this was Superman and Damian
and Jonathan.
Okay, yeah. So in the that was kind of funny. In the last issue, Batman came to see Superman. He brought Damian along with him so the kids can play. And he was talking about Jonathan and how he should be stronger than Superman. He should have more powers that he doesn't have, and we should figure out why. And then, you know, they defended it, and he's not eating anything bad, and blah, blah, blah. He's talking. It leads Batman to go down the road to the neighboring farm where they get their milk. And that was when they had the amazing picture of Batman in the dark staring at Bessie the cow.
ready to milk her.
And when he went to milk Bessie the cow, fucking the Venom symbiote attacked him. And Batman disappeared. Well, in this issue, they wake up in the morning and Batman's not there. And the kids decide they're going to... Well, they decided they were going to go try to find him. The dairy farmer, the one who has Bessie, he comes over to the house to deliver their milk, and he's creepy as fuck. Like, he's threatening Superman. Straight up threatening him.
That's awesome.
And then he goes outside, and he's talking to Crypto, and he, like, I don't know, Crypto's eyes were, like, both their eyes were glowing purple, and he looks all intimidating, like he's using Crypto to spy on Jonathan, and he also pretty much said he is the reason Jonathan can't fly. He is the reason his powers are inconsistent,
mm-hmm.
And he didn't say why. Now, here's the interesting part. They cut to a guy who is smoking a cigarette and has a mustache, and he's got the video screens up. And one of the video screens he's looking at, and I fucking noticed this right away, he's looking at the squid that they fought in an earlier issue. And the squid had like an eye and it had a weird mouth thing. The fucking squid looked exactly like the fake alien from Watchmen.
I think that's an instance where you're seeing what you want to see.
No. Go look up Alien from Watchmen.
I'm very familiar with what the Alien from Watchmen looks like.
Look up Alien from Watchmen, look at that thing, and then look at the panel of mysterious guy in a room smoking a cigarette with that fucking thing up. Because I looked back, and even in that thing's original appearance, people were saying, oh, this looks like the Alien from Watchmen. People noticed it, and it was fucking there. If you look at those two, they fucking look alike. This was done on purpose.
I'm feverishly looking this panel up because it looked like a squid, but I'm just like, eh, there's a lot of squids that look like that. And I think you're seeing what you want to see. Let's see, I'm looking at this. Okay. It's a weird, freaky looking squid. I'm looking at the eyes.
Okay, and then look at the picture.
It's a little reminiscent. I mean, I'm not gonna fight you because it's you could argue any kind of weird looking squid eye is gonna look like that alien from Watchmen. So I can't really say one way or the other.
Okay, but in a room with a dude smoking a cigarette, who kind of looks like the comedian. But you're telling me they didn't do this on purpose.
We'll see.
I'm just telling you it's on purpose. That's all. All this shit now, I'm convinced, it's fucking on purpose.
Because up until now, I've been of the impression that this is just a self-contained story and this doesn't really play into the overarching
reboot. No, and I don't think necessarily, like, I don't really think this is the fucking comedian who's watching and directing things. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But I was supposed to think that. So, they're doing it on purpose, and they're doing it because they know people are looking for it, and they know it'll get people to talk.
Yeah, and the specific angle I'm looking at right now is where he's taking a drag from the cigarette, and his eyes are sort of covered, but the shadow, the way it's covering it, looks like it might be a mask, and he's got the facial hair like a comedian. So
yeah, they're doing it on purpose. That's what I'm saying. I'm not – so people understand. I'm not saying this is the comedian, but I'm saying DC is throwing this shit in to get people to talk. Mm. And, I mean, you can make the argument that, like, oh, all these things look reminiscent because Dr. Manhattan has reordered reality and this is what he's doing. Yeah, you could say all that shit, but really it's just to get us to fucking talk on a podcast and go post on a message board and talk about it.
Yeah, it's the idea of, even if it isn't, it's done with the impression that they want you to think that.
They're cock-teasing in so many books.
They're putting the idea in your head.
Either way, it was cool art, and it was a good reveal of a mystery person impacting another mystery person impacting their lives. We got Ozymandias, now we got this fucking mustachioed motherfucker.
I'm curious to see how all this ties into Jonathan and the family, because we've seen
the other one was they fought the squid, and Jonathan damn near killed it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people were yelling like, oh, you gotta stop it, you can't just, because Superman was gonna let it go. Superman doesn't kill. He's like, oh, he's not going to hurt anyone else now. And then it attacks something, and fucking Jonathan just lost his shit and heat visions it. But as things went on, they were going to find Batman, and the little girl who Jonathan was friends with, like, kind of grabs Jonathan and takes him away. And he's like, oh, but I why can't I use my heat vision? And she was like, oh, you better be quiet or he's not going to let you use, or he's going to take away more of your powers.
Mm-hmm.
So confirmed that he would be strong and, you know, all that. So it was a good tease for the next issue. It was a really good tease.
All right. Since we're talking Superman and Jonathan and Damian, let's talk our next book. Super Sons issue 3, writer again, Peter J. Tomasi, art by George Jimenez.
Yeah, and this wasn't so much a continuation, but it
had the same characters, though.
Yeah, so in the last issue, they had caught up with the super-powered multiple man kid who we found more out. So they got their powers from the Amazo virus, which I did not read that storyline.
Yeah, that's from the Geoff Johns run of Justice League.
Yeah, but I mean, they explained what happened, so it's fine. Some people got powers from it. Including this family. The kid is an insane serial killer who, after stealing, and we saw this in the last issue, after stealing the Amazo armor, he, like, merged with the armor, and he can now create robot copies of anyone with powers that he comes in contact with.
That's really stretching the Amazo gimmick.
Yeah, well, creepily, we found out he was recreating his family over and over again so he could murder them over and over again. The sister, her power was, the younger sister who we thought was alive, her power was she could control machines. So when he recreated her, since she could control machines, she took control of her new machine body and was able to fight his robot creations.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have this correct?
Yes, and it's very confusing because you're dealing with a lot of moving parts here, but that's basically the gist of the story.
Yeah, so they were fighting, and I got the sense Damian might have had a little crush on her.
That was cute. Oh, there was instances to our, you know, obviously Damian and Jonathan are used to palling around and calling each other by their secret identities, but because they were hanging out with the girl, as Jonathan was about to call him Damian, he would immediately cut him off.
And he did it like three times, and then he was also like, oh, you're just upset I didn't invite you to the Teen Titans. He's like, no, I don't care about that. And then later on, why didn't you invite me to the Teen Titans? He's like, because it's called the Teen Titans, not the Toddler Titans. He's like, are you 13?
Yeah, that was the thing. That was the question I've always had, because, you know, you look at the makeup of the new Teen Titans, and it's like,
Starfire is not a team.
Why is Starfire on that team? You could argue
that, like,
Raven's on the team.
Beast Boy lives by himself, so I don't think he's a teen. Like, Damian is. He's like 13, 14.
But at least we now have an explanation of why Jonathan isn't on the team, because he's 12, probably.
Yeah. Even though he pointed out to Damian, I'm taller than you. But no.
Well, they did that kid, that sibling thing of where, you know, I'm older, well, I'm taller.
Yeah, they're fun together.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I like that. So, like, Jonathan's like, we should go get my dad and your dad. Like, we need dads to deal with this. And Damian's like, I'm the greatest hero in the world. I don't need anyone's dad.
God, I love Damian in this book. Honestly, I love Jonathan in this book. He's a really, you know, relatable character. But Damian as the star of this book, it's so great. Yeah,
Jonathan is very much like a real, like how you would imagine a real kid is, which is funny because he has superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
But Damian is also like a kid. Like, he's kind of like a douchey 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Except he can kind of back it up. Although at one point he did say, like, yeah, maybe we should have got our dads for this. Like, he admitted it.
So cute.
Yeah. But they didn't stop the bad guy. So the story is not over.
No, it's going to continue. We obviously saw the end of this where they saw the two kids fighting a bunch of versions of themselves.
Yeah, even though the one girl can just fucking blow them all up.
Well, that's the thing. She's worried. Like, even though she's a robot, I this is the part I didn't explain. You can help explain it because I don't understand it. So she was a robot and she died multiple times, but why did she say she's afraid of her brother? Because she's going to find the real version of her.
Okay, because, like, I guess what happened was what they suggested, because they said she's a robot, but the real her is inside her, maybe through her robot powers, if you can call them that. She gained the ability to, like, set up shop in a robot.
Mm.
So she's actually living in the robot body now.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, so it is the real her.
I was just wondering, because I'm like, I could see how I can misunderstand this, but I think I know what they're going with this, but I just had to get some confirmation on that.
Yeah, just go with it. It's really her.
it's really complicated, but no. Cool. I think they're really milking the Amazo thing. It's like, they're telling a story, and they obviously want to tie it into the stuff that's been done before in the past, but I'm just like, okay, can this just be just a new character? Does this have to tie into something that happened a while back?
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter, because the focus isn't on that. It's basically like, that's the excuse to have the comic and have these two, like, go on an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
It's background dressing for this new villain, because he doesn't really have Amazo's powers. Like, he makes copies of himself. It's just the copies have superpowers.
Well, he's able to make copies of the superheroes. Like, he makes copies of Batman. He makes copies of Superman.
Yeah, but they work like those characters, except they really don't, because they're pretty easy to break, as we saw. As Damian and Jonathan were just completely wrecking these robots today.
I don't know if I like the idea of, because presumably you think a book like this would be them going on their little adventures and them being pretty self-reliant. I don't like the idea that they immediately have to ask for the help of the parents.
Well, that's the thing. Damian didn't want to until things got really bad. Like, he didn't want to at all. It was Jonathan who wanted to. And the point of that is, you know, Jonathan is a little more like a kid. like, you know, Jonathan is much more of a kid.
Mm.
Because he had a normal upbringing. Whereas Damian was raised by the League of Assassins. So it's just showing the difference between the characters. And I imagine Superboy will be on the Teen Titans, but probably not until they finish the storyline and he gets all his powers.
Yeah, because really, I mean, I understand why they're going with the version of the Teen Titans they're going with, because they want to be as similar as to the original as much as they can.
They want to mix the old and the new.
But eventually, I wish they just had a really good team. Oh. If that made sense.
Oh, by the way, the backup in every DC book, the big ad was for the Titans Deathstroke story. Oh. I don't know if you noticed it. It is going to be in Titans and Teen Titans, and then it ends in an annual.
Yeah, we talked about this in news a while back.
Oh, I thought we said we didn't know why it wasn't involved with Teen Titans.
No, it's crossing over with the three titles.
Oh, okay, never mind then. It was good ads.
Yeah, that's the one thing we've always liked about Rebirth. There's really good communication, because sometimes when you read Marvel books, they'll solicit one book, and then when you read another book, and they're soliciting a completely different title. You read a bunch of DC titles, and they're all soliciting the same book that's going to come out in a couple of weeks. So presumably, if you don't read about the solicitation in one book, you're going to get it in a few others. The idea being they're pushing one thing at a time, as opposed to Marvel, whenever they do a relaunch, they push a bunch of things at you all at the same time.
Yeah.
All right. Since we're talking the extended Superman family, let's talk Justice League, issue 19, writer Brian Hitch, art by Fernando Passarin. Okay.
Did they finish the story in this?
They finished the story in this. My only question for you is, you didn't read the last issue of Justice League, and I did, but I still don't know exactly what happened in all this.
I know what happened in this. Okay. The girl who drew them all together, it turned out she wanted the what was his name? The Timeless something. The big bad guy who we thought was, he wanted to send Earth like away
to the,
like,
edge, the edge of the universe, because he's like, all the things that happen,
or no, to the end of time, but he was going to put it in a protective bubble so that they could all live their lives, but they would not affect the rest of the universe. The girl who was pretending to help them, she had a different idea. She actually said, no, even if you go there, you'll mess everything up, so I just want to kill everyone with superpowers.
She does have a point there.
Yeah, but like, the problem isn't Earth itself, it's all the superheroes on Earth. You guys caused the problems. So she wanted to kill him. And they were all spread throughout time. Well, they ended up figuring out that all they needed to do to fix this was to blow a bunch of shit up, pretty much. So they did. And then they beat her, even though she had, like, superpowers from the she had superpowers from the Timeless whatever's machines.
Essentially becoming what she hated most.
Well, but she was only going to use it to kill them.
I know, but I feel like there was some irony there as well.
Well, maybe a little, but she had to, because she said they were like gods, and it wasn't right. So she ended up fighting them, but, you know, lost. That's pretty much what happened. Here's the thing. I liked this ending to the story. I had no problem with it. The reason I'm not saying a lot about it is because it was largely just a big fight.
I'm curious then what you think of this entire Hitch run of Justice League.
I've liked some parts better than others. I'm starting to get annoyed because every time he does a storyline, it's people talking about the greater threat. And there's a bigger threat. Everyone they fight, from the first storyline to this one, it's, oh, we're going to have you have to do this or you have to do that because there's a bigger threat coming and blah, 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 blah. They've done this over and over and over and over again. And I'm like, literally, this is like the 18th time we've heard about this. And it's like, you have to deliver because I'm getting so sick of hearing about it.
I think it's going to be a situation where this is a long-term storyline. This is going to all wind up playing into.
It's been 18 issues.
You know what this reminds me of? Remember when we first started reading the Hickman run of Avengers and I complained to you how they kept going on and on and on about this?
No, this thing. Isn't the same. You know why? Because in the Hickman run, he was introducing new characters and he was building the team. And then when he introduced a new character, he would do something with that character. Like he would have an issue or two where he did something with the character. The Justice League team doesn't change. It's the same team. They're not developing characters. They're not adding new characters. They just keep doing stories where they fight and it ends up with, oh, but there's something greater behind it. And they never give us any of the connecting tissue.
This reminds me so much of that early beginning of Hickman's run Avengers where I'm just like, I don't care. And it's like he's clearly telling a big story here, but unfortunately, we're going to have to go through a couple of issues, and I'm sure in the end it'll all make sense and all the pieces will all fitly nice together, but at the same time, we're having to read this book on a monthly basis or biweekly basis, and it's just like, it doesn't make sense, and it's...
But the thing is, that was all clearly sort of building up to the same thing. We didn't get the reveal, but the characters were aware of what they were doing, and they were making moves towards solving it. In this... They don't know, and they don't even really, like, the characters themselves haven't brought up that this is all connected, which is another problem. Like, nobody's thought to say, like, oh, you know, there's all this really weird shit happening to us. You think maybe it's all connected? Nobody said that.
And they keep harkening back to the stones, and they're singing, and something's going on with the earth, and it's like... That's fine, and I know this is going to pay off. And I've
That's the connecting tissue is the guys from the last run, the last Hitch run.
The sad thing is, I've seen that Hitch is a pretty good writer, and this is probably all going to wind up making sense in the end. But really, had this been any other title, I would have dropped it by now. And I think I've talked to other people who have been like, yeah, I keep reading this because it's Justice League, but this book is really doing nothing for me.
Oh, I was going to say, if you want, I'm perfectly happy not reading this.
We'll see.
Like, I'll read it when I read something happened. But until then, I can't deal with another storyline of, oh, the bigger threat is coming. I don't care about this.
Let's put this in the maybe pile. If we have a lighter week when this comes out, I don't have a problem putting it on. If we're at 20 titles... I'm fine this being number 20, but any more than that, it's like this is not going to be book 21 that we read in a given week. It's like if there's room for it, yeah, but if not, I'm not going to go out of my way to read Justice League anymore. Considering the Justice League of America title is significantly better.
Yeah, that's fine.
Aquaman issue 21, writer Dan Abnett, art by Felipe Brones.
This didn't go the way I thought it would.
No, and it actually wrapped up in a nice, neatly packaged, except for the last part at the end was...
Well, it didn't wrap up.
Well, the Dark Water stuff wrapped up really quickly.
We got a resolution to the mystery, but... Okay, so Aquaman and Mera decided to go down to into the...
The sinkhole.
H2+O, I think they're calling it.
Yeah, A2.0.
The weird water that they couldn't breathe in. But Aquaman kept saying, he's like, I don't know, I can... Like, it was actually kind of clever. He was, like, using descriptors and words, and Mara's like, how the fuck did you even come up with that? And he's like, oh, I don't know. Well, it turns out the thing was talking to him. Like, he said, the weird sinkhole, he's like, he called it a gate. And he had no reason to call it that. So they decided, well, fuck it, let's go through it. So they went through it, and they ended up on another planet, and it turned out, this is so weird, the planet, it was like a sentient It was a planet of sentient water.
Mm-hmm.
And it was looking for someone who, basically who it could communicate with. And since Aquaman has the aqua telepathy, he could communicate with Aquaman. And the dead water monsters that were attacking, they found out it was like its defense mechanism. Like,
basically, if other people were coming towards it, and whatever reason why the sentient water didn't feel like,
well, it tested them by like making them afraid.
Well, that's how it started off. That was one of their defenses, and then I think as another self defense mechanism, that's when they launch out the black water.
Well, it said what happened was if they overcame the fear and they could get through, then they passed and it was okay. It was like a dual test defense thing. But if they stayed scared but kept coming and just kept getting more and more scared, eventually they would turn into one of these monsters. So during Aquaman and Mera discovering all this, the Marines and stuff on the base with I can't remember the guy's name, Villain, who had been previously attacked from one of these. They had this nuke, and he's like, we gotta blow the fucking thing up. Well, he steals the nuke to go do it, even though they're in it. Sorry, this is... So he steals it, but there was this chick, like, I think she was an FBI agent, because she had a shirt that said FBI.
Really? What was the telltale sign on that?
Yeah, she had been creeped out the whole time, and at this point, like, since we'd just been told this, you knew, like, oh, she's going to turn into the Deadwater monster. She did. And they didn't really deal with that, like...
Well, that's how the book ended.
Yeah, the book ended with her being Deadwater monster, well, but no. Aquaman and Mera were on their way back.
Actually, I take that back. There was the one scene where one of the other ones was getting mad. And as she's getting mad, her head turns into the shark.
Well, no, but that's her power.
Yeah, I know. But it was just funny. They established that.
That was funny.
They've been transformed, but it only seems to be based on their emotions.
And this is, I mean, the art in this book was fine, but this is one of the books where I really noticed. I'm like, wow. All these scientists and marine women sure are very attractive. It's like, seriously, like, you can't draw like a tubby chick or something.
Like a homely-looking one?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, that FBI agent, I don't think she's like a field agent. I think she was, you know, supposed to be a scientist.
But she looks like a stripper.
We can't have a plain-looking girl. Like, no. It's okay if Mara's hot because she's like, you know, the undersea queen. But, like, come on. You can't
have her looking a little butch.
Yeah, and it's not. I mean, it's not like it was exploitative or nothing. They were,
well, again, welcome to comic books and since forever.
They were fully covered up.
All right, that's going to do it for the mainline DC portion of the show. Let's move to Astro City 43 with writer Kurt Busiek, art by Brent Eric Anderson. This was cool because it was kind of a follow-up from the last storyline, but this is also the start of something new as well.
It was actually really funny because Broken Man opens us up and he's going to tell us a story, and then a little girl fucking... She, like...
She was also aware of our presence, by which we mean the audience, the reader.
Yeah, like So she takes over his story, and he actually got kind of mad. Although it did somewhat relate to his story, because he was going to tell us about the bouncing beatnik, who is the next guy in the line with Mr. Cakewalk and the girl who I don't remember. We didn't really get his story in this.
We got shades of it. I mean, obviously, it popped up here and there, but clearly, his story was being commandeered because we had to get the origin of the gentleman.
Yeah, and that was actually really cool, and I didn't expect what they did at all. I thought it was neat. So what happened was the gentleman has been a character in Astro City forever, much like the astronaut, and Busiek never gave us anything on him.
Mm-hmm.
So, this was like his origin. So, little girl, dad loved her. Everything was going peachy keen and fine. And then he, there was like an attack on the city or something.
This was, I presume this was during the 40s because the people that were invading were part of the Nazi army.
Yeah. And by the way, she was still a young girl in the present when they were talking to her. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so, her dad is like a super good dude. So he gets her to safety and then he stays outside and like gets everyone else to safety.
Yeah.
So,
all the other kids.
Yeah. So he's like, you know, superhero guy. And, during this, like a building falls, basically a building falls down and fucking cracks him in the head and it looks like it kills him. But then suddenly he appears in a suit. And earlier she'd been talking about like how she thinks he'd look good in a monkey suit. He appears and he suddenly has superpowers. So she kind of details her past on like how her dad wasn't around a lot. But she knew he had to do this important stuff, so that's why. But if she was ever in real trouble, he'd show up. I don't want to give a detail of everything that happened, but in the end, what it turned out was she's like a super powerful, like she has the mind powers.
She's a psychic. She's a psychic that not only did she is the gentleman a construct of her psychic powers, but it seems that her psychic powers also stop her from aging because they mentioned that the gentleman was always there as a father, but she knows over the years that she didn't change her age and neither did the gentleman. And
at one point, like, she, they didn't really need to do this, but I guess it was like a just a confirmed thing. She created a brother for herself who was like another gentleman, but he looked different. And as she's talking to Broken Man, because, you know, she's, presumably she's so powerful that even this fourth, like she was talking to the reader. So I mean, it's suggesting that she's so powerful that like she can see through the fourth wall sort of thing. But at one point she thought, you know, maybe I should grow up and maybe I should let my dad go, but she couldn't. She's like, my dad's too important.
She saw it's kind of selfish for me to want my father to continue existing in this world of superheroes when really he's passed on. I'm just doing this for my own selfish purpose. But then she also brought the you know, the secondary fact of
he saved the world.
Yeah, the gentleman's a superhero that helps save people. So it'd also be selfish if I let the gentleman go away too. So basically what's the term I'm looking for? Nothing changed. It's like,
but she also didn't seem like she was totally like there.
Yeah, because I don't know if because this led with the introduction of young gentleman as well. Because she's like, I've always wanted a brother too, and so it's like a younger version of gentleman flying her around.
Yeah, it was just trying to show how powerful she was. I think like she can just off the top of her head create new superhero personas that are just as powerful.
If she wasn't such a sweet, nice girl who was using her powers for good, you could see
but how it was kind of creepy, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, because she's been alive for all this time, but she still acts like a little kid. And, like, she knew her dad was dead. It's not like she realized that in the story. She knew he was dead the whole time. And she still kept doing this and kept pretending he was alive and made this fantasy world where he was actually the gentleman and he was only gone because of this and that. Like, she's a little nuts, but she's not a bad person. She's just kind of crazy.
So this,
right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Astro City's always been good, but this is one of the standout issues that I thought really, really blew me away.
He does one-shots so well.
I kind of wish that's all it was, because he gets long in the tooth sometimes. He'll tell.
Well,
like,
the thing is, though, this was a continuation of the story he's been telling. Like, Broken Man's been in the last couple issues telling us, like, hey, this is important, this is important.
Yeah,
and
but
this was going to continue that, but he let his own characters take it off track.
I get the feeling the Broken Man is just going to be a thing that happens in this book, because ultimately I was like, okay, this is
no, all... They're definitely... He's building to something. Like, he is.
I don't know. It's in this issue, I just felt like, okay, so Broken Man's just going to be a reoccurring gimmick, and we shouldn't expect some kind of resolution going forward. Although,
yeah, I don't get that sense at all. But I mean, I've read a lot more Busey of comics than you. He's doing all this for a reason.
Oh, I will say this: you're probably right, because in this issue, he really put over the fact of, look, I'm busy telling other stories, but I don't want you to forget there's certain stuff, because it's going to wind up paying off in the end.
Yeah, but he said that before too. It's like,
but it's not like he hasn't delivered. Like, remember, he introduced American Chibi, and we didn't get the follow up on that for like, what, 18 months?
Oh yeah, like he could. When I say he's definitely going to deliver on this, it could be in like fucking 3 years. Like, it's not necessarily going to be right away. But I mean, the strength of Astro City is, even if he's doing this big storyline and these are all pieces of it, when he tells that storyline, it's not like Astro City has to end. He's got a fucking universe here with like 8 million superheroes in it. It never has to end. It would be like, oh, after DC finishes this Watchmen thing, there are going to be no more DC comics. Like, it doesn't work like that. It's just, this is the big thing he's building to, because he never did that before in Astro City. They were all, much like this, they were all separate stories.
Self-contained stories, yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't connect. Like, you'd see characters that you saw before pop up over and over again, but that was it. Like, they just pop up. They wouldn't be a focus. The big difference in this run is he's actually dedicating a lot of time, a lot more time, to a lot more of the characters.
I'm curious. This is such a great, I guess, tool to the idea that he has all these great superhero stories, but he doesn't want to be limited to either one brand, like, you know, Image or not Image, Marvel or DC. So he just made all these facsimiles. Has anybody else done this in the history of comics? Since you've been reading, obviously, comics a lot more than I have, the idea that someone's decided to make like a separate universe where they can tell Superman stories, but for whatever reason why they want to tell stories that outside the normal means of being stuck with the continuity.
Al Moore did Supreme. That was basically just Superman, because he wasn't going to work for DC.
It's going to be so liberating, because it's like, okay, let's say example. I've got a Fantastic Four story in me, but it's just the one story, and I don't want to be chained for like a year or so with the FF. It's like, I have the one story, and that's it.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, how much does he, like, do in here that he wouldn't be able to do anywhere else? Like, is there really that much?
Well, the thing is, he's obviously writing for DC here, and we've seen in the past he's done several facsimiles of Marvel characters, so it's the idea of he's having his cake and eat it too. He can still continue working for DC, but because they're his characters, he can write whatever character, even though they may belong to another publisher.
So some of the characters are incredibly different, though. Like, I know you didn't read it because it wasn't in the current run, but like, Confessor was basically his Batman. Mm-hmm. But Confessor turned out to be a fucking vampire, so it wasn't, you know, it ended up being nothing like Batman.
Well, that's the thing I'm saying too. He can take liberties with the characters because they're not the mainstream, you know, mainline characters. He can do stuff with them. But he can have them die, or he can have them be different in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but he did kill Confessor, but he hasn't killed a lot of characters.
What I'm saying basically is why haven't more people done this gimmick? Because it seems like this is like a gold mine. It's like, I could just do whatever stories I want to do, and it's like, as long as I make them different, I can continue telling whatever stories I want.
They might want to, like, actually write the real characters. They might want to... I think a lot of creative people, they don't want to just iterate on what other people have done. Like, if you're going to go to an Image or something and do your own line, you want that to be your creation. you don't want to work with somebody else's.
Well, that goes back to my initial premise. It's like, why don't more people do this?
Right, because I'm saying they don't want to.
Oh.
When they leave, like, if somebody wrote Batman for DC, it's because they wanted to write Batman for DC. They don't then want to go write a different, like, their own Batman knockoff.
But to me, this is liberating because it'd be like, okay, I got one Batman story in me, and I don't want to be saddled with Batman for a year, or I don't want to have to write an annual that no one's going to read. And I don't want to be beholden to all the things that make a Batman. It's like, I want to do a Batman story where he kills a dude, and he just has to live with that now. It's like something you couldn't get away with if you were working with the mainstream character.
Well, why do you think less people would read an annual than some random indie book?
Well,
I guarantee a Batman annual is read by more people than Astro City.
Well, I'm saying it's more so I want to do stuff that Batman would never do, and that's why I want to use my own character. Like, obviously the Wildstorm stuff, and that's going to be our final and next DC book.
Those are different characters, though.
It's like I want to do something different with Batman, and
I think people do this more than you think. Like, I mean, there's no reason, you know, a guy writes Batman and then he goes to write another comic character and he can't tell the story he wanted to tell with Batman with that character. I'm sure it happens all the time, actually. Comic writers have talked about that. Like, oh, I wanted to do this here, but then I wrote this book and I did it there. Like, they do it. But, you know, if you do like a, I don't call this a knockoff, it's more of a tribute book. There's not really room for multiple Astro Cities. Like, you don't need... He's kind of... The funny thing is, in ripping off these characters, or not ripping off, in paying tribute to these characters, he has created his own original gimmick.
Yes.
So he doesn't want to, you know, fuck with it.
All right, since I mentioned earlier, Wildstorm, Issue 3, writer Warren Ellis, art by John Davis Hunt.
Okay, so this, I don't know if Ellis thought he was moving slow, because this very quickly moved things.
No, that's been one of my critiques of this Wildstorm run. It's good, but considering all the stuff that's he's gonna wind up unpacking and wind up having in this universe, I was like, yeah, he's really kind of moving at a snail's pace here.
Yeah, I think he just wanted to move quicker for an issue. Because in the last issue we had, they actually called them the Wildcats, but explained why they would call them that in this. They went to get Angie, the engineer. They went to get her because they work for Marlo, and he wanted to thank her basically for saving his life, and they knew Io was out to kill her because the engineer suit she has is their technology, and she basically stole it. So they went to help her, and there was a really cool fight scene.
Oh,
and
God.
Grifter finally put his mask on. He did not explain why he put the fucking mask on.
How did he put his mask on before? Because I remember in the first issue we got a little bit of
Grifter. It was the cover.
Ah, okay.
It was the cover, and I complained. I'm like, why the fuck isn't he wearing the mask? They put it on in the cover. Well, so he could do it in this while they were having a cool fight. Yeah, but he put the fucking mask on and he looked cool and he was fucking shooting everybody and she was shooting everybody and they were cutting back to Io showing that they were monitoring everything that was going on and they knew that she stole their shit and all that. Jenny Sparks made her return in this issue, but she didn't really speak much, and she looks a little different, and the only reason you know it's her is because she's smoking a cigarette, and because they showed a time travel thing. I mean, this is... Okay, here's the deal. She's got to be slightly different, because Jenny Sparks' gimmick was she was... that has created this theory that there were these very few characters in the Wildstorm universe who were born in the turn of the century, and they would live for 100 years for some important purpose, and then they would die. Jenny Sparks is one of them. Now, she had a lighter that had the date 1955 on it, but since we are in 2017, she cannot have the same gimmick.
Why not?
But because she would have been dead by now.
Oh, okay.
Because they only live for 100 years. So, so she's got a different gimmick is what I'm saying. But still, you know, the character smoked and the character appeared to be English. She had an accent, so. That was all good. But, yeah, the main crux of the issue is the big fight and cutting back and Io and the Wildcats team, and they called them Wildcats, by the way, because they were a unknown covert action team.
That's terrible.
Therefore, they were Wildcats because they are a cat team, but they didn't know who they were. They were unaffiliated, is what they said. Wildcats, which they said once very casually, just to be like, which I thought was cute.
No, don't encourage them.
Oh, it's fun. Let Ellis have his fun.
Yeah, if he wasn't so good, I'd be like, ah, this is kind of amateur hour here.
I buy it from him.
Oh, obviously. I mean, there's obviously Ellis here, and this is his playground. Obviously, he doesn't have to. I like this because it really is his thing. Normally, I would think this is gonna wind up, you know, springing into a bunch of titles that Ellis is in no way, shape, or form associated with. No, this is, in fact, Ellis' baby.
Oh, he's picking all the creative teams and everything, so.
That's good.
Yeah, it'll be good. But, yeah, the thing ended. I mean, what they wanted you to think with Jenny Sparks was like, oh, my God, they're going to have the authority. They're not necessarily. They were just showing that she's been around
they
for a while and
she
tracks all the weird shit.
I mean, obviously he's taking this time, but you know down the road that's what we're getting.
Yeah, but I hope that, because the thing is, when he originally started the Authority, like the storyline that led to the Authority built up over like a 3-4 year period, and big shit happened before the Authority were ever a thing, so I don't know. I don't want him to just toss it out there. But, you know, whatever, if it makes people happy.
It would certainly make me happy, considering I never grew up with that. Or wasn't reading comic books with that.
You really should. One day I'm going to give you the... Because it's really, you only have to read one Stormwatch trade and then the first two Authority trades to, like, get it. But one day I should have you read that. If we ever have a really light week, we're going to read his run.
Well, the thing is, I've been doing on our YouTube channel, obviously I put the news portion of the show, and maybe I'll eventually start putting the reviews. But what I've lately been doing is I review graphic novels, so that could be one of the things that you have me read.
But it's multiples.
Oh.
You have to
that's
multiples.
Gonna that's going
to
take a while.
I don't know how many issues it is, but...
That's going to do it for the DC portion of the show. Let's move on to Marvel with Secret Empire Zero, writer Nick Spencer, art by Daniel Acuna.
What is this?
This is Secret Empire. it's funny comparing the button with Secret Empire that happened to come out.
You
the
know,
same week.
I everybody hated this. I didn't hate it. I actually thought it was one of the more notable Zero issues we've had in some time, because they usually land like a big pile of shit and nothing at all happens.
Yeah, that's the big thing with issue zeros. It's like they're there because it's basically people's first taste of the event. But for the most part, because it's zero, not a whole lot happens.
Yeah.
And at least this had the benefit, at least we got something in it. I think Marvel's realized now they can't keep doing issue zero and nothing happens. They can't keep jerking people around. It's like, okay, we got a little bit of that. I think people wouldn't have been crapping on this so much if Marvel hadn't been announcing all the stuff they're doing going forward, you know, the ban on Advance and then Legacy and then It didn't help. This also came out the same week as The Button. Because I feel like if you read this in a vacuum, it wasn't so bad. But the problem is you're reading this book in 2017 and the backdrop of all the stuff that's going on with Marvel and DC. And this really did, especially after The Button, this kind of felt like a step down. This felt like subpar. Whereas if you put this in the backdrop of most of the Marvel events as of late, you're talking the Civil Wars, you're talking the Age of Ultrons, the Original Sin, the Axis. This was actually a pretty good start to it.
Yeah, well, let's talk about what actually happened. So this opens up in the often mentioned Chitauri invasion force coming to Earth finally happened, and it turned out it was all just a backdrop for this. So the thing that we thought was going to be this huge deal and we were not looking forward to ended up not being a huge deal at all, and we were right to not look forward to it because of that. The villains were attacking New York and Hydra was attacking all throughout.
Yeah, but basically between the Chitauri and then a bunch of Hydra goons and a bunch of other supervillains that were freed, basically they were hoping to split the superheroes up that way when Cap finally...
This was all Cap's plan. That's the
idea was to overwhelm the superheroes to when he finally does his big reveal that they're all scattered across and they can't really stop him.
Yeah, so he...
And also part of that was, too...
The Chitauri attack had been planned by Hydra for years because they found out if they captured a Chitauri queen, the Chitauri fleet would eventually come to get her. So they did that. And the whole reason they did that is so they could reveal it to some people who would make the planetary shield. Mm-hmm. By the way, this is completely ridiculous. They kept writing that Cap is a master strategist. He could not think this fucking far in advance. He just couldn't. It doesn't make any sense. But whatever with that. It's just... That was the reason they had the planetary shield they kept mentioning was for the Chitauri invasion. The reason they captured the Chitauri queen to have a Chitauri invasion was so they could build this impenetrable shield around Earth, get off all the heroes who could fight in outer space, and then not lower the shield so that they would be trapped in outer space.
Well, another reason why they did this giant plan the way they did, the idea was the government and S.H.I.E.L.D. were giving Cap and Cap more power. And with all this stuff going down...
There were three separate things going on that I already mentioned. The New York attacks, the whatever, fucking worldwide Hydra attacks, and then the outer space shit. They activated the S.H.I.E.L.D. Act, which gives the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is Captain America, complete control over the United States military, mm-hmm. which is what he wanted. He is now commander in chief. Once he gets this, Hydra then started attacking all the helicarriers. And he revealed to Shannon Carter that he is, in fact, the supreme leader of Hydra, and she could not believe this, would not allow her to be harmed, but he wanted her, you know, to, like, I'll explain to you why this is happening.
He's like, please forgive me. It's like, I'm doing all this for a reason.
Yeah, and she's just disgusted with this.
Well, it's more so she knows that this isn't her Cap, so she knows something's up.
Yeah, she thinks that. Now, they also went into Cap's background to try to explain away some of the inconsistencies, like, how the fuck has Cap been fighting Hydra all this time if he was actually a Hydra agent all the time? Well, of course, one of the problems with this is if Cap never would have been put in the block of ice, right? Mm-hmm. That would have had to have changed. What happened was, Cap met up with, back in the day, the guy who founded Hydra, who explained to him that he had to be placed in this water that would make him travel through time and give him false memories so that he would not remember the glory of Hydra until it was time. So that was basically them explaining away why Cap has been a good guy for so long until now.
My
because
favorite,
now it's time.
My favorite is when they did the reveal in my head as a pro wrestling fan. Obviously, I'm expecting Tony Schiavone, Bobby the Brain Heenan, and Dusty Rhodes to be like, Captain America is the third man!
My favorite thing in this was how Marvel fucking sucks at continuity because let me ask, what city were big name heroes like Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, who despite, I don't believe this was written by Bendis, got a lot of fucking screen time. What city did this take place in, Tony? Just what city was this in?
New York.
New York. Yeah, it was in New York. Where the fuck were the X-Men who recently relocated to goddamn Central Park so that they could be heroes? Where were the X-Men during the biggest fucking threat to the city ever? Oh, they weren't there because we had to show Luke Cage and fucking Jessica Jones fail. At least they failed.
You're complaining about continuity. At least they kept that.
Yeah, they're fucking failures. Your books suck, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. Your book's all right, but you shouldn't be fucking doing superhero shit in New York. If it's so serious that I'm not a superhero, Jessica Jones does it, then maybe the fucking X-Men who just moved to New York so they can act like superheroes should have done some fucking superheroing. For fuck's sake. God, I was so annoyed by that. I don't think... We saw Quicksilver and Rogue because they're in the fucking Unity Squad, which they pointed out got brought back together for this. By Cap, I guess.
I'm so confused because it's like...
They mentioned it. They at least, you know, recognized it, but fucking completely ignored that the X-Men exist. Also, the fucking new humans, like all the ones who were left behind and like fucking Garnak were chilling in New York, we're going to be friendly humans now. Where were they? Oh, they didn't appear here. No, we had to have fucking Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, big goddamn powerhouses. I'm surprised fucking Squirrel Girl wasn't there. What the fuck was this? That's what pissed me off. You want to have a big deal crossover? Put all your fucking big deal characters in it. Don't put Luke Cage and Jessica Jones in it.
Why is
Iron Man back?
That's what I was trying to figure out too. I think this is something from the Riri series. Cause like Tony's there, but he's not there. It's like, it's an AI or something.
Okay. Here's what I thought. I'm like, oh, maybe it's like a robot inside it, except they showed the fucking Iron Man suit and it had eyeballs.
Yeah. That's,
Robots don't have eyeballs.
Can somebody explain to us what's going on? I know a lot of people follow us now on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube.
Yeah, if one of you guys could fucking tell us, that'd be cool.
Because I know people have put over that Riri series. And we know what the thing is. We read the first issue, and I don't know why we didn't follow up and continue reading it.
Okay. Here, now that I've talked more about this and I got angry, let me say, here's what I liked about this. I like the stuff showing Cap as a heel. I hated everything else. I want Cap to win. I want Cap to kill Luke Cage and Jessica Jones.
Well, Alex, the reason why X-Men and the other characters were involved, because Marvel is not in the business of promoting characters they don't own the movie rights to.
Oh, that's fucking bullshit.
I can't think of another reason why they don't do it.
Their entire fucking push right now is, oh, we got to relaunch X-Men. We're going to do a million fucking X-Men crossovers. If they weren't in the process of doing that, they wouldn't have taken the Inhumans, fucking shot them off into outer space, and then moved the X-Men to New York. And just giving them new relaunches, and now it's 15 fucking spinoff books. They're doing shit. They don't care about the fucking movies, because the movies have nothing to do with the comics. The reason the X-Men weren't in this book is because the fucking vague threat that they were fighting that they could not possibly defeat, it would have been harder to justify them not being defeated when fucking the X-Men were all there, too, because there's 8 million of them now. Another thing that pissed me off was, you got to show a hero getting hurt in the outer space fight, and the fucking hero they picked was Hyperion, the most powerful fucking hero you have. I thought he was dead. they showed him get shot with like 5 laser guns. I'm like, motherfucker, did you not read Squadron Supreme? The original? Did you not read?
And okay, let's say you've never read anything. You're going to kill off Superman like that?
Yeah, he's fucking Superman. He got shot with laser guns. Or fucking the new, God, fuck. Bitch with the nega bands.
Oh, Quasar.
Yeah. She fucking got jobbed out. She got eaten by a space dinosaur. And then just fucking later, and like Captain Marvel's like, no, Hyperion. And like, I thought he was dead. And I'm like, that's a really shit way to kill a character. And then later on in the book, you just fucking saw him flying in the background. He was fine. So I guess it wasn't that debilitating, which is good. But you can't have fucking like one of the jobber heroes, like, you know, Jessica Jones or something, get hurt. Like, nobody died, which it's a zero, so I guess that's
this
good.
This to me sort of encapsulated everything that's wrong with Marvel right now.
It's just, I mean, this, the one thing I'll give it is I did think Cap, I mean, it was a good plan he had to finally take over. I don't know what the end game is, and I actually am interested to find out, but if this is going to be fucking Cap taking over America and Luke Cage leading an army of like fucking Daredevil and Power Fist and fucking White Tiger,
White Tiger
and
can be awesome.
Jobber number 7, and they have to stop President Cap, I'm going to fucking be so angry about how shit this is. Right now, half of this book was good, and half of it was a pile of crap. And by the way, first like 4 or 5 pages of art really good, and then it went directly down the shitter for the action scenes.
The thing is that we've seen with this event that they're going to be switching. They're going to have multiple artists.
Well,
A lot of this was Daniel Acuña, but then a lot of other stuff I didn't know who this was by.
Yeah, my suggestion is on the action-heavy pages, you put the good artist, and on the pages of Cap fucking walking in a cave, talking to Vacuum Man or whatever the fuck his name was, you put the shit artist, because that's not as visually interesting. That's just my suggestion. All right.
I'm curious to see where this is ultimately going to go, because as we saw in this week's Thunderbolts, they sort of did away with Kobach, and it's like, how are they going to undo all the stuff they've done with Cap now?
I don't know. They're probably going to fucking kill him again, and then he'll come back again. Or maybe at the end of it, like, fucking Kobach suddenly pops back up, and she's like, oh, I'll fix everything, and she brings Wolverine back to life, and then we can have 3 fucking Wolverines running around. I don't know.
Yeah, since I brought it up, Thunderbolts issue 12, writer Jim Zub, art by Joan Mallon.
Okay, so this stuff happened in this issue. Kobach apparently exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Atlas turned heel. Sort of. Not really. Did he turn heel? He looked sad.
A little. Because obviously okay. he turned his back on Bucky, but at the same time...
Like, he thought Bucky was dead.
Yeah, but then he's teaming up with Zola.
Well, but he thought, like, his whole team was dead, and he had nothing else to do. He's sad, because his girlfriend died.
Okay, but you immediately jumped to run to Zola, then?
No, I didn't like it, but, you know. It wasn't Zola, it was Zemo.
Oh, whatever. I always get the two confused because they have
Zemo's cooler than Zola.
That's true. In fact, I think someone did a countdown of like the most preposterous looking characters.
Arnim Zola would be near the top. He's tied with MODOK.
No, MODOK's kind of fun. Whereas
MODOK is a giant head with tiny little T-Rex arms.
Yeah, he's fun.
And little legs he doesn't use. He's not threatening. Arnim Zola is a guy with a fucking screen for a face in the middle of his chest.
That's why I say Zola is probably the worst.
Or on his belly. they're all fighting the, I don't know, the new Masters of Evil or whatever. And Carla, whatever the fuck her name is, she almost immediately turns heel and joins Zemo.
Yeah.
Because she's pretty much been a bad guy the whole time, and you didn't know why she was on team. Fixer, he doesn't feel great about it, but, like, he goes with him. Bucky tried to fight him, but he couldn't win. And he didn't. Well, he kind of won. He sort of won the fight, but then he ended up getting fucked. So...
And then in the end,
Obik exploded. Jolt, who just came back, apparently used up so much of her power that it made her shrink. And then the ghost fucking creeped up and put her in his pocket.
That was great.
And he seriously walked away and he's like, hee hee hee. So, but what they did in this was they set up this new status quo for all these characters, but this was the last issue. So when they said Thunderbolts is ending, but it's probably coming back, I sort of buy that.
Because it's so entrenched with all of the Secret Empire stuff.
Yeah.
I could see how just for now it's going to go away, but then eventually it's going to come back.
This was the last issue, and it felt like a last issue, but it felt like a last issue in that a lot of shit changed, but you know, I wanted to know what was going to happen. And I'm not going to find out. So that part kind of sucks. But I mean, I imagine somewhere I'll find out. And Bucky's not dead, so. I don't know. And I don't think Kobik's really dead.
Why would you do this then?
Like, she, like, blew up.
Well, but... I will say this. If you were to kill off Kobik, you wouldn't do it in the pages of Thunderbolts.
Yeah, they were looking for, like they said she, like, dispersed into pieces, because Zemo was talking about recovering the pieces. So maybe she could reform herself. The main split in the team came from, like, Bucky is like, no, we gotta take care of Kobik. And the other ones are like, no, she's fucking dangerous, we need to kill her. So, like, Fixer made a gun, a big anti-Kobik gun. He is going to shoot her. But Zemo wanted to control her.
Yeah.
Or kill her. So they couldn't fuck up the Hydra thing.
It is like, certainly weird.
Yeah, I don't know what they do from here. But
And what's the motivation to bring this book back? It's not like it sold particularly well. And even putting Bucky and have it tied with all the Secret Empire.
It sold better than Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur and Squirrel Girl.
Did it really? I haven't seen the Comic-Con numbers.
Yeah, dude, I got to keep pointing out, Squirrel Girl doesn't sell for shit, and Moon Girl sells like 7,000 copies. So yeah,
but yeah, we know
sells,
why.
It sells better.
Squirrel Girl, I honestly, I don't know why it's still around. That one I can't defend. Moon Girl, just like David Otunga on Raw.
We know why she's there.
We know why she's there. But here's the thing. I will say this. The Inhuman versus X-Men crossover, that got me to care about Moon Girl.
You like the character. Yeah, but do you care enough to read her book?
No.
Me neither.
But that's why I said a lot of these characters, they're great. I don't want to see them in their own solo titles. But if they're part of a team or if they interject here and there or they're a guest star, I'm cool with that.
Except Longshot. He deserves his own book.
Yeah, I think...
All these fucking X-Men spinoffs coming out, and we don't get Longshot, we're going to get a fucking Iceman book. Like, anybody cares about Iceman and his fucking boyfriend, Romeo? Seriously, his name is Romeo. I'm not making a joke. That's fucking name.
Yeah. Long-time listeners of Comic Conversations know that, so you're preaching to the choir here, homie.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I know. Where do you want to go from here? We got Ms. Marvel, Moon Knight, and Punisher. You seem like you're in a generally cranky mood. Let's talk something that makes you happy. Let's talk Punisher. This was generally inoffensive. This was basically...
Yeah, Punisher fucking killed everyone because he's badass like Braun Strowman. Fucking murdered little guys and put them in dumpsters.
Shame there was no dumpsters for Punisher to throw people in.
No, he threw guys in the water. So what happened was the leader of the mercenary force who wants to prove they're badasses is an idiot. And he, my wife's an alcoholic, by the way. And he,
just throwing that in there, right?
She just took a bottle of wine and walked into the room.
Well, she has a physical dependency like many of the characters would wind up developing in this thing with that that toxin.
Well, yeah, but that kills them. Like, a bottle of wine is not going to kill her.
But being an alcoholic will.
So what happened was they decided they had to, you know, the guy who Punisher knows who took over after he murdered the drug dealer guy, he explained, we're fucking mercenaries, we're badasses, and we're going to prove it. Whoever kills Punisher gets to be my number two, and he decides it's a good idea to untie Punisher. So, of course, Punisher fucking kills everyone, and he, like, starts taking dudes and smashing their faces into the drug. Keep in mind, the drug that makes you sort of have superpowers, but you also get incredibly angry, and then you die painfully. So he's, like, smashing their faces into it, and they all go nuts, and they start fighting each other. And then the guy's like, you fucking idiots, cover your faces. Just don't breathe it in, and you'll be fine. So a couple of them do it. And then Punisher, like, he's bored with killing these guys. So he's like, hey, just you and me, we'll fight. We'll just, one of us will kill the other one, and we'll decide who comes out on
top. Yeah, so the leader of all these goons injects himself with some of the...
Well, he jumps off the boat, and then he injects himself with it, and then he's ready to fight. Although before that, when Punisher said, why don't we just do this one-on-one, and he's like, oh, you're only saying that because you don't have any friends.
That's sad. But
which,
true.
I don't know what happened to Punisher Hound. You remember him?
No, that was before my time.
Mm-mm. No, it wasn't. You read that book.
Punisher Hound?
The one where he was in L.A. and he had the dog.
Oh, that was barely a thing.
He should have kept it.
Punisher Hound.
Punisher Hound. He puts a fucking skull on him and gives him a gun.
Like, he gives him a mini gun that he has on the side.
No, you attach it to his back, and when he barks, he shoots
when he barks.
Or bees out of it to attack the bad guys.
Guns that shoot bees.
Dude, there was a character in DC, he's called the Red Bee. He was a villain. He shot, like, attack bees out of his boot.
Bee!
Yeah, you could have done that with a dog, with Punisher Dog, Bee Dog.
And then
he's friends with Bee Brian Blair.
And then when they do the crossover with DC, you can hang out with Crypto.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. Punisher Dog and Crypto. Yeah. But yeah, so the next issue is Punisher fights this guy, and I'm sure he's going to lose, and they're going to kill Punisher.
Oh, God, I'm in a good mood now, but we're going to ruin this with one of the two books, Moon Knight or Miss Marvel.
I liked Miss Marvel.
I for the most part, liked it. Except
I thought it was funny.
I didn't like the message of it, where it's like, ugh, there's so much negativity on the internet. If we're all really nice to each other, the virus will change. And it's like...
Well, but they logically explained it. It was a virus that learned via the internet. And what are you going to learn on the internet? That people are dicks.
Yeah, there's tons of good stuff on the internet,
it
too,
it became
though.
A dick. Not really. There's... Dude, yesterday I was on Facebook. I'm tell a story on Common Conversations. Yesterday I was on Facebook and I saw one of those, I bet this soldier won't even get one like, please share. And the only reason people put these fucking things up is so something they put up will get shared or liked like 100 million times. Listen, I don't give a fuck about your ugly ass dog, your fat sister, your fucking... crippled veteran. I honestly do not care. And when you put that shit up and tell me to like it, not only do I actively not like it, I have to fight to not put up something negative calling you a pandering asshole. That is how I feel. And that's someone trying to do something nice. So what that says is even people trying to do something nice, they're probably actually doing it for selfish reasons. And most people on the internet are dicks. So that was correct. But the funniest part in this book came when Kamala figured out that's why this thing was such a dick, because everyone on the internet is, and that's where it learned. So she goes, so I got a plan. It takes 12 hours to recompile, so we have to make the internet be nice for 12 hours.
But here's another question I had when reading this book. Did she have to fly all of her clan members into the same room to do this?
No, she did not. she did not. And it was kind of ridiculous that they would do that, because, like, I'm in a guild in Warcraft. If they fucking told me to go spend some money to fly to Jersey City, I'd be like, fuck, I don't have any fucking money come Jersey City. Also, what kind of fucking guild only has four people in it?
And also to the point, I think she's, well, I don't know if she sprung for it, but either way, it's like, they have nothing better to do than fly all the way to Jersey City.
Yeah, well, the point was, it's like, I've never met these people, but we played this game together for years, and even though they've never met me, look what they do for me. Like, they fly from all over.
And only one of the four people in the clan are a big fat loser?
Yeah, just the chick. Like, the other ones are all in... I mean, one of them was like a... He looked like a truck driver. And the other guy was some hipster trash.
Like a hipster trash is playing World of Warcraft?
Oh, God, dude. Tons of hipster trash plays World of Warcraft. Tons of hipster trash reads comics, too. But that's like beside the point. It's because they can't relate to people on a real level because they only speak in, like, memes and shit.
I will point to your intro music as you being a hipster.
Fucking hipster, because I picked a song from the 90s? That makes you a hipster now?
Yes.
That's the music I grew up with.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, indie music.
No, that wasn't an indie song. That was played on pop radio.
Wow. Should I know?
Yeah, music, believe it or not, when I was a kid growing up, on normal radio, they played, like, good music. They actually did that.
Well,
it was
weird. The problem with that is Napster kind of made all other kinds of music unprofitable.
Yeah, well...
Besides pop music.
Well...
I do, in fact, as much as I like... You know, our modern society with it's easy to pirate stuff. The one thing that has undoubtedly suffered has been music. Moon Knight 13, writer Jeff Lemire, art by Greg Smallwood. I laugh every time I read his name.
Okay, so Moon Knight is... He successfully saved Anubis's girlfriend to bring Crowley back to life. By the way, important to point out, we still don't know if any of this is real.
Yeah.
We're assuming it's sort of not, except... So he tells them, like, yeah, we're gonna go back to the crazy house, and Khonshu's going to be there, and he's coming to kick Khonshu's ass. And what they did in this was they did some flashback stuff... to get over Bushman, who has a terrible name, but he is technically the longest-running Moon Knight villain. He was a guy who was on Moon Knight's mercenary team, but Moon Knight had some morals, and Bushman had none.
Yeah.
So he pretty much, like, they were on a mission, and... Like, Frenchie was their pilot, and, you know, Mark Spector pre-Moon Knight is there. These people were looking for the tomb of Khonshu, and the mercenaries wanted it for some reason, and they showed up, and he's like, all right, we're just gonna scare them. And then Bushman immediately fucking stabs a guy and kills him, and then says, all right, so you're gonna tell us where it is, or we're gonna kill the rest of you. Just very flat out, and Spector is not cool with this, because he is a honorable mercenary. Because those exist. And he, like, knocked him out. But that was all background, because we were more in the present. So I imagine that character is going to make a comeback of some
type. If this was, like, a story where they wanted to focus on aspects of Moon Knight's origin, I'd be kind of cool on board. But this was done specifically just to set something up in present day.
Yeah, which is fine, because that is a story element. I mean, they've been doing that in Wonder Woman for 15 issues now or whatever. That's a way to tell a story. I have no issue with that. It's just, I feel like I might be starting to figure out what he's doing in this story.
Really? You mind telling me? Because you were the guy who was, you know, you were on your last nerve with this book, and I don't know if I can convince you.
They did. they did the issue when it was him as a kid, and he had the imaginary friend, Stephen Grant. And I was like, okay, so he was always crazy. And I thought, that's kind of different. Like, the fact that he's just always been crazy, but sometimes he can deal with it and sometimes he can't. I'm like, that's a different gimmick from he's just balls crazy and he made Khonshu up and all that shit.
Well, I don't think that's ever been, I don't think that's ever open. That's been open for debate. It's always been, he was been controlled in some way, shape or form by Khonshu. And it was always, I was always under the impression that he was a normal guy and then Khonshu drove him crazy.
It depends. There have been a lot of Moon Knight series, and everybody sort of dealt with him differently. What Lemire is saying is he was always crazy, and that's why Khonshu picked him. Because Khonshu, to exert his will, needed someone who wasn't, like, mentally sound. So, like, they've done stories in the past where it's like, oh, I gotta stop being Moon Knight and then I won't be crazy anymore. This is saying, no, he's gonna be crazy regardless. And by the way, if you're having imaginary personalities, you're crazy, because that's not common. Like, if you are imagining other people exist and imagining you are other people, you are firmly balls crazy. Cause
confirmed.
That ain't normal. So yeah, he's crazy, but he seems to be dealing with it pretty well at this point. As in the other issues, when he destroyed, or got rid of the other aspects of himself. There was a weird thing in this where he's going after Khonshu, and he's like, he's physically in his own mind and had to punch through it, and Khonshu's like, no, you don't realize what you're doing. You're already damaged enough. And I don't know if that's actually going to come back or not, because he just, like, said something threatening, like, I'll show you damage.
You know what the worst part about all of this is? Jeff Lemire is obviously telling a long-term storyline. The thing is, he's leaving that book.
I don't care. I still am sick of Jeff Lemire on this book, but if you can't tell, the storyline is wrapping up.
I think he's doing that thing we often see in comic books where his tenure on the book is wrapping up. So while he's still writing the book, he's setting stuff up that the other guy wants to do. Cause I don't know if this book's going away.
I think he is going to finish this story. Like, we're going to know what went on in this crazy house and what the status of his supporting cast, who may or may not be imaginary. I think we're going to find all that out before this ends. Because he's spent so much time on it that I can't see him leaving without finishing it. I mean, he obviously knows what's going on. He's not writing this month to month. Or maybe he is, and that explains why so much of it is kind of crap. But, I mean, this wasn't a bad issue. It's just, I had to come to terms and accept the fact that he's, okay, so you can do the mysterious protagonist in a comic, but you can only do it for so long before it gets tedious. That's the thing with this. That's the problem with it. Because he let it get to the point where it was kind of boring.
I wouldn't say it was boring. It was complicated, and I didn't care.
But there's complicated where, like, you know, like a Hickman or a Morrison book where it's complicated, but you kind of know it'll all make sense in the end. And you think, if I really think about this, it'll make sense. And then there's complicated, like this was, where it was complicated because you had an unreliable narrator and you're never going to know what's really going on until they tell you. Because it's not written with hints, because he doesn't drop hints. He's crazy. And if it just ends up with, oh, he's crazy and that was all fake, I'll be upset, because I feel like, you know, if the character just keeps the status quo, then I wasted all my time reading this.
Did you know last year, 2016, I thought that was going to be the year of Lemire? Because I'm like, he was writing a bunch of stuff for Valiant, and then he came to Marvel, they put him on X-Men, they gave him a few other books. I'm like, oh, this is the year that he's going to shine. And then Tom King came out of nowhere.
Well, Tom King's only doing one book, though. Like, LaMire's still writing more comics than him.
I know, but I thought he would be, like, the big superstar for the year. And then Tom King came out of nowhere, wrote Vision, wrote, what is it, the Babylon book. What was that called?
Sheriff Babylon. Sheriff. No, Tom King's written a lot of good books, but I don't get the sense he's, like, a bigger star than LaMire is.
He's only writing the number one book in comics.
Yeah, but that book sells regardless of who writes it.
And Vision, honest to God, as much as I like...
Nobody bought Vision.
Yeah, but I'm saying as far as quality. As far as someone who reads comic books.
No, as far as quality, he's top-notch. Mm-hmm. I'm obviously not arguing with that. I love Tom
It's like,
King.
Are we going to argue LaMire's a draw now? It's like, no, come on.
I don't know. He sells more total comic books than Tom King does.
But just barely.
No, it's not barely, dude. Batman sells well, but Tom King writes a lot of fucking comics. He's selling more. I mean, again, are they buying it because Jeff Lemire's? We've read books because Jeff Lemire did them. And we're like, oh, Jeff Lemire, he's all right. I mean, it feels like he wrote so much at Marvel that it was like less special.
I'm more so saying his Marvel stuff has been kind of lackluster.
Yeah.
Considering I thought so highly of him before, and then he did came to Marvel, and he was just there. X-Men, Extraordinary X-Men was just kind of there at times. Sometimes it got kind of good, but for the most part, it just felt like they're just doing stories just to kill time.
I mean, if you look at his X-Men and you look at what's going on now, he was clearly told, you know, just maintain, don't do anything crazy. Because we're going to do a big shake-up and nothing you do matters.
And is Moon Knight kind of explored a couple of things? You mentioned earlier where we saw the history of Spectre when he was a little kid. That was kind of cool. Yeah. And the issue with all the personalities was cool for like an issue, but he did it for like five.
Yeah, that went way too long. But I don't think Marvel cares that much about Moon Knight. So they probably just told him like, yeah, do what you want. And he was like, okay. And then he did what he wanted.
Well, at least he's writing other stuff now, and I'm reminded why he's so good.
Oh, yeah, because he's good on other stuff. Yeah.
Namely his Image series that we're going to be talking next, Royal City Issue 2, writer and artist Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, and by the way, can I just say, like, I know people have made this comment about his art before.
Say it.
Everyone
funny.
He draws looks like a heroin addict. like a couple of these characters, they're supposed to be, like, a little strung out. So that's cool. But, like, everyone, like, the brother who's on actually, the brother who's on drugs is the one who looks least like he's on drugs. Mm-hmm. But just everybody looks so bad. And it's like, I understand that from a story perspective. I'm not sure if it actually fits this story. Cause they're not all supposed to be miserable. What I want to know is they had the sister who was like, who had like a good job and stuff. We didn't see her in this issue. We saw her in the first issue. I got to go back and look and see if she was drawn differently because I think she was. And if that's the case, then the people he drew like that on purpose to, like, show that they kind of have the weight of the world on their shoulders. In this issue, the main character, the writer, I'm assuming he's the main character, he had another moment where his dead family member was talking to him.
Oh, that was great. When did it happen? When he was vomiting in the toilet, right?
No, there were two. Because they both did it. It was two members of the family. One of them was when he was throwing up in the toilet, except he was – and then he actually talked to him in the car. But, yeah, like he saw the brother, but then the other guy, the writer, I think he sees – I don't know. Is it his kid brother? Is that who it is?
I'm not 100% sure, and I think it's sort of written like that on purpose.
Yeah, well, whoever it is, he could like hear him talking like through the song on the radio, and it was kind of – that was actually a clever little bit of art by him because he had like the words floating up out of the, like sometimes they do that in comics, like they'll put musical notes and then they'll do it like a dialogue box. Well, he actually had it, the words come out of the radio, but it was like ghosty looking.
I wonder what that's supposed to mean. Cause remember in issue one, that's what happened with the father. He's heard somebody, on the radio that he recognized the voice. Radio. What's that?
It's like a ghost thing going on. Mm. And they haven't explained why. I'm kind of disappointed they didn't have the sister story because, you know, she was the one who was going to, like, take down this factory that a couple of them worked at, and it's what the town ran on, but the factory was on the decline. They wanted to keep it down because they didn't know any better, but she wanted to build a big resort and, like, turn the town into this tourist thing. Like, I thought that was actually kind of, like, an interesting story about
that. I think what he's doing here, he's explaining, and I wish more comic books would do this. They explain the premise of the series, and then they go into world building. More often than not, especially with Image comic books, they'll waste the first couple of issues world building, and I find that so obnoxious. I'm like, explain what this book's about, and then once you have me hooked, you can do all the world building you want. And this is what I want. This is what I want from more comic books. I think the way you, especially with Image books, that's the way you want. I want to go going forward, because when I'm fourth or fifth issue into the book, and I still don't know what the series is about. That's when I get upset and frustrated, and I'm just like, forget this. And unless it's a big name, I'm just going to throw my hands up and give up. This is an example of, even if they hadn't done that, Lemire is a really good writer, and the art's pretty good. I probably would have stuck around, but I wish more comic books would do this.
Yeah, I mean, if you took the ghost stuff out, like, I don't actually think it adds much. And, you know, I've said before, I'm not really into horror stuff. I'm not into ghosts. I don't give a shit. But, like, if this was just a book about this guy going back to his hometown, like, I would read this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I think the characters are somewhat realistic, and I find them interesting, and it's nice to get, like, a... I don't like to use the term, like, slice-of-life book.
Wow!
That used to be really overused. I don't like to use that, but I mean, that's what this is.
I'd probably pants you for that if I was there right there with
well,
you.
Well, I mean, that's what they're called, though. Like, it's not...
I would describe it as character work.
Well, it is character work, but when you say, what kind of book is this, you can't say it's character work, but you can't say, oh, it's slice of life book. Because that's what they are. These were really common in indie comics about... late 90s, early 2000s, and then they kind of went away. I think it's what Lemire got us started.
It's because I like it, and it's one of those things to where I can read this book forever, and it doesn't need to go anywhere. The characters, I mean, we are obviously dealing with a big cast here, and I still don't have a firm grip on who everybody is. And I think
it's really just the mom, the son who's a writer, who has a failing marriage. We saw that in this issue. Because what they explain, his wife is an actress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the main character, he wrote one book, and it was hugely successful.
I believe it was called Royal City, right?
Yeah, it was called Royal City. Well, it was apparently about the city.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote that, and then he wrote another book, which people didn't like as much, because they wanted Royal City too. Well, since he was such a big star, people give him another chance. So he's working on a third book, but he like got calls from his publisher, like, where's our fucking book? And he's like, oh, it's almost done. But that's not true, because in this book, he was trying to get some work done writing, and he got as far as writing chapter one. He's done nothing on this book because he's got all these problems. Like, his marriage is done basically, and he's got some self-esteem shit over his second book, people not liking. And, you know, stuff like that. So, and they never said if the second book was actually bad or not. But, you know, he feels that, and he can't write because of it. And then the sister, who's actually trying to improve the town, but she doesn't have much to do with the family, the mom, whose husband has recently died and who apparently wasn't a very warm woman before that.
I don't know. Are we talking about the father here? I don't know if the father's dead.
Didn't the father die? He's in the hospital.
No. He's in a coma, and they don't know if he's going to come out or not.
Didn't they bury him in the last issue?
I think that was the younger brother that died a while ago.
They specifically
talked in this issue about the dad having the stroke, and they were like, oh, we don't know how he's going to be. We're going to have to wait until he wakes up, if he ever wakes up.
Oh, okay. So they were flashing back. That's fine then. Okay. Well, yeah, the dad's got that going on, but... The dad and all the kids, except we don't know if the mom does, and we don't know if the sister does. They're seeing ghosts.
I wonder if they're going to wind up doing something with that, or that's just a red herring.
They're going to do something with it because it's too obvious.
Yeah, but
you can't hint at something like that with multiple characters and not do anything with it. Know, it's definitely going to
The book is so good without it, and I feel like we'll have to wait and see if it's any good, but I feel like just the character work in this book is good enough.
The thing is, I mean, it could just be a device to move the story forward because you have no hook without that. There's no mystery. It's just like, oh, they live in this town. A bunch of their lives kind of suck. That's it. That's the whole book.
Mm. Yeah. And with that said, I really like this series. My only thing is because Lamar does the art, I got this confused with 80 After Death. I was like,
That's a lot less art and a lot more words.
I know, but it's the same amount of art, but the thing is, there's a lot more. Huh?
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
That After Death book had freaking pages of just text with one picture.
But the thing is, and I know this because I bought the physical book. Half the book is literally all text, like you said. And then the second half of the book is a full-length comic book.
Is it full-length?
It's a double wide book. Half the book is all text and half the book is drawn like a physical comic book.
Well, I was half right. It has more text.
Oh, that's with it. Yeah, you were right on that, but I'm just saying there's the art in this. I think he has like 20 some odd pages of art, and then I think the book is like 40 pages. That's why it takes forever to read, but I'm not complaining because it's really good.
Did we miss the last issue of that, by the way, or is it not come out yet?
It has not come out yet, so rest assured.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a little Matt Snyder in that book because he's convincing me. He's like, oh, I can write just regular books. And I'm like, damn you, Snyder, you're getting me to read regular books and like it.
Well, it's not. Okay, first of all, you shouldn't be sad that you can read books that aren't comics. That is something more people should do, including comic book readers. You just shouldn't be sad about that.
I'm not sad.
And
I'm
really
mad.
It's still not a real book. Even the pages of text, they have pictures behind them.
Yeah.
And you're not learning anything, so I mean, you don't have to be sad about that.
Good. I'm happy then.
Bad. Cuz we don't want to learn anything.
God forbid.
No. It's terrible. We're Americans. All right, let me have a smoke before we do the next book.
Okay.
Like an American. I'm going to go have a smoke and eat a turkey.
A ham and cheese sandwich.
A ham and cheese sandwich. I hate ham and cheese, dude. Have I ever told you that?
No.
I find it revolting. I don't know why. I like ham. I like cheese. If you melt cheese on ham, I hate it.
Since basically this show has become the Jeff Lemire Power Hour, let's talk Black Hammer issue 8. Obviously, writer Jeff Lemire, and art by D. Ormston.
Oh, this was good and had a shocking ending.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We forgot to list it off when we were listing off next week's books, and I'm like, nope. This is one of my favorite comic books from Lemire, or just in general, Black Hammer. And I was reminded in this issue why, because we did a lot more stuff on what's the name of...
Well, they did a lot of stuff on everyone. The Gale and
there we go, Golden Gale. There we go.
Like we got her history, more of it, which was madly messed up. So they did the history of Golden Gale. She was drinking in a bar. The 8-year-old who's drinking in a bar and feeling bad for herself
and smoking.
Well. I don't think it really – she drinks and smokes and she's 8, but she's actually like 70. So, you know, it's going to happen. So,
Are we laughing for the same reason?
This made me laugh. So they showed when she stopped being the character.
Yeah, the superhero version of herself.
Golden Gale, when she stopped being that. And what she basically did was she's Mary Marvel is what she is, but she is the founder of the Golden Family, I guess. It's very much Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. Like we saw Golden Gary and I don't know, Mr. Gold and like another girl or whatever. And she just goes to him one day and she's like, all right, I'm not doing this anymore.
You're leaving out a vital member of the family.
Oh, the dog. Or no, it wasn't a dog. It was a duck.
It was a duck.
Because and what that suggested to me was that was actually more character development. She was so bored. She was so bored with her, like her life, that she just started giving these powers out to anyone. Like she gave the powers to a duck.
Quack. The panel I'm looking at. She's talking to the various members of the extended Gale family, and one of them is just the duck, and all his only response is quack.
Yeah, and it's like she didn't. It's not like she had any great love for these people because she pretty much talked to them like they were a part of her job. And she just very quickly said like, oh, well, you know, we're pretty much finishing up here and I don't want to do this anymore. And you guys are holding things down. So you're going to be in charge now. And then she turned into like 40, 50 year old Gale.
I think she was older than that, dude.
Not in those pictures. She was firmly like later middle aged.
Okay. She looked like 60 or 70 to me.
No, she wasn't. You have an odd view on what people look like. She was supposed to be like slightly above middle aged. Or I guess middle aged now is what? It's like 50, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she looked about middle age. She was like 50. She wasn't supposed to be in her 60s. They very clearly showed she didn't have gray hair or anything. She wasn't like haunched over. She was a normal looking, slightly overweight, middle aged woman. But after, you know, saying she's quitting, she goes and visits her greatest villain, who is a reanimated corpse, apparently, and has sex with him. And apparently had a relationship with him. I'm not sure why. And, but you know, it all eventually led to her getting trapped in the town. So apparently at some point she came back. We cut to Barbalian, who it looks like the pastor from the church he has a crush on might be a gay for him too. Maybe.
Yes.
I don't know.
Just me.
I think it might be a swerve. Something bad's gonna happen to him.
And then the
new girl in town, Black Hammer's daughter, who got trapped here and she doesn't know how, like she doesn't know how it happened. She goes to Talkie Walkie, who's building another probe, which never work. And he kind of explains to her the whole probe thing he's doing. And she goes, well, wait a minute. I got here somehow. So if I got here, there must have been something that sent me here, which means there could be something that would send me back. And he's like, oh my God, I never even thought of that. That changes everything. Thank you so much. And he's all excited because he's going to go work on this. But as he's planning to work on this, what's his name? Colonel Strange?
I'm not familiar with his exact name, but I know what you're talking about. The guy who travels in and out of time. He's got the big wizard beard, and he's got the astronaut gimmick on.
I believe his name is Colonel Strange.
Okay.
Yeah, so he... he, like... I'm sorry, I'm losing my place here. He like comes up and he shoots him.
Yeah,
like
basically
blows him up.
Basically, when Walkie Talkie figures this out, he's like, "Oh, great, that's going to be a great way for us to get out of here now." And then the astronaut shows up and shoots him. So obviously, there's something behind them being there.
And he apparently killed him because like the guy had like the green liquid in his head. And it leaked out, and he was smashed, and he's just like, yeah, I can't let you go any further with this. So he might know more about what's going on
than, he's going on, yeah.
Than anyone else. but he's also crazy, so. Yeah, I don't exactly know what that means, but it's not good.
Certainly not. What was so funny that you were laughing at?
You're not going to be up all night.
That's something I saw.
Was it this? Since we're done with the review.
James, no, it was not.
Read it something. Real quick, and then we'll go into the next book.
Why is that funny?
Just read it.
Yeah, I read it. Why is that funny?
He signed the SmackDown posters over Becky's face.
I just don't understand why that's funny. He's a heel.
Stripping on her face.
Turn that down.
All right, next book.
All right. Let's see. Since we're dealing with folks acting shady, let's talk Descender issue 21, writer Jeff Lemire yet again, and art by Dustin Nguyen.
No, you change it, bud. Sorry, we're doing this earlier, so the kid's up.
So, I said Descender because we're doing all the Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, stuff. I heard you. Okay, so I'm sick of Jeff Lemire now. Descender, what happened? We already knew Tim 21 was bad. Andy and Queen Between. Andy and his girlfriend and the other dude and Bandit, the little dog robot, they went to go find him pretty much. Mm-hmm. And they showed up right outside the Hardwire's base. Like, when I say right outside, they appeared in front of their giant fleet that they were going to kill all the humans with.
Oops.
Meanwhile, the humans' entire space army knows where the Hardwire are, so they're coming for them, too. The Hardwire apparently knows this, because Tim 22, when he was masquerading as Tim 21, found out. So this was really just a building issue, actually. We didn't get a lot of development. We just got, like, the characters put into place for big stuff to go down.
Hmm.
It wasn't a bad issue. It was just nothing. I mean, it was all set up.
Yeah. We had a little bit of basically, this felt like they were just setting all the pieces up for the big next arc is going to be.
Very much so.
All right, let's move on to Archie issue 19, writer Mark Waid, art by Pete Woods.
I can't believe we saved this for so long.
Is that bad or good?
I like this book. I don't really want to cover it anymore. Archie and Veronica's relationship wasn't as good since she left because they both changed a little bit, but unexpectedly, Jughead brought them back together, and Jughead doesn't like her, but I guess he realized that, like, well, she makes Archie happy, so.
I felt like there was a better story in them breaking up than them getting back together.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole thing with Archie is you do the Betty and Veronica gimmick. And you,
well, see,
you
that's what I'm saying. You could eventually pull the trigger on it. Because as of right now, we're talking 19 issues, and they still haven't done the back and forth yet.
Yeah, and they might be doing a slow build to it. But also, like I said, if they do that, it kind of makes Archie come off as a heel a little bit.
Explain, because I'm curious now. Because they were separated for a year, and they changed in that time. So it would make sense.
If Archie is the kind of guy who would just string two girls along.
But isn't that the Archie gimmick?
Yes, but that was the Archie gimmick from the 1950s. We're in modern day now. So you shouldn't.
Actually, I could argue you're wrong, because I'm pretty sure that's how that show was done.
Well, the show's for teenagers, though, and they like the the drama.
Because it would be a good time, because Betty's also seeing that one guy. So I feel like it'd be a strong choice to do.
She's not really seeing him, though. You know, that's one of the odd things about this. They've done absolutely nothing with that character. Like, he's just kind of a guy. They never even established that they're dating.
Well, they just started. That's the thing. We saw
well,
the last...
yeah, but they never, you know what I'm saying? They never really showed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was no relationship built. Like, in fact, the last we saw was she was going to do something else with that super nerdy guy.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. It's as things start to develop with her and that nerdy kid, then all of a sudden Archie's on the market again. And I felt like you could have done something there.
I think that was more meant to be like she just kind of like she dug this dude and didn't expect to.
Mm-hmm.
Not like she's actually going to date a giant nerd like that. You know, not because she's a bad person or anything, but it's just those two really don't fit. Like, you know, she's a hot chick and he's a big giant nerd.
Because Archie's so much cooler.
Well, Archie is presented as, like, I know he's kind of a goof.
Uh-huh.
But he's still presented as someone everyone likes. So, you know, it has that going for it.
Okay. So you don't want to read this book anymore?
Yeah, it's like I want to read it in that I like it and I think it's a well-written good book. But I never, ever, ever have anything to say about it.
I thought the last issue was really good, but it's also, like I mentioned earlier in the show, I have my heels to die on. Obviously, I've pushed for books in the past. Archie is not going to be one of them.
No, and I do like this, and I will continue to read it. It's just I don't like it enough to cover it, because I'm never going to have a lot to say about it. Like, it's just, it's us... you know, questioning, like, oh, is Archie gonna, are they ever gonna do the Betty and Veronica gimmick? And it's like, well, how much can I talk about that? Like, no, they're probably not. Or if they do, it'll be a long time from now.
Okay. Let's move on to Eclipse Issue 6, writer Zach Kaplan, art by Giovanni Tapano.
What is this?
Eclipse. You have problem hearing?
Yeah, because usually I'm in a quiet room and now Jack has his annoying YouTube garbage playing.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of garbage, bud.
Guess we're talking Eclipse.
Okay, so they had the big thing in this is another one we can do quick. They were running out to, find another group, and there was a they saw like a big prison yard, and there was a silver guy tied up there.
Mm-hmm.
Like another one. So these guys used to work for the city, but they don't like him anymore. Hang on a second.
Turn that down right now.
Sorry, I had to use serious dad voice. Okay, so they had the whole setup there and blah, 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 blah. And, like, he finds a guy, and the guys who are with him, the crazy guys who attacked him, they're not actually crazy, but, you know, whatever. They said, you know, oh, we don't want to be with that town anymore. You guys are bad. And he's like, well, what about this guy? I need him. And they're like, your people made him.
Dun, dun,
that was
dun.
The shocking ending. Yeah, the people in the town are the ones who made the silver can't die to the sun people. So what does that mean? And then the mayor, or not the mayor, the cops had sent guys to go get the mayor's daughter, but she met up with the resistance to the town that we didn't really know existed, but they did. And they chased her through the sewers in what, to be honest, was a pretty cool...
the good little action sequence?
Yeah, it was a good action sequence. Like, it was a good chase sequence. I don't know how this girl who lives down in the sewers and all she does is, like, sneak out to drink and party is like an Olympic-level athlete, but whatever, it was funny.
And then they reintroduced the idea that the sun is just like, it kills them on.
Oh, on yeah, because when they're chasing her, like at one point, like they're in the. They're kind of in the sewers. They're in the sewers, but I guess it's close enough to the surface that like she was messing around with things.
Yeah, and, like the sun was being
point, like
the sun was yeah, being stopped by a couple in. Planks of wood. But as they were chasing her, she was able to move some of the planks of wood, and they were well, burned.
She didn't do it on purpose to kill them. She yeah. just as she was jumping, she grabbed onto a plank of wood and it fell off, and the sun came through. So they're showing a bunch of the guys who were chasing her ended up getting killed. You know, melting in the sun, which then makes you question, like, okay, so if they have a way to protect from this, why isn't everyone silver? Like, what's going on? And that's your mystery now, because there's really no mystery to the sun killing people. Like, it's just like, oh, the sun did it. Mm-hmm. Like, that happened. Fair enough. But the real mystery is, where do these silver people come from? Why aren't they affected by the sun? And now we found out it's the live here that cause it. So it's just another little wrinkle to the story.
Yeah, in a good enough series. I'm curious to see where they go with the silver people, because that's always been the premise of this book. Obviously, that everybody has to live underground. The only time they can come out is during the night. And the thing has always been, I think, since the mini, because that's what it felt like, even though it was, what, about 4 issues?
Well, it was going to be a mini.
Yeah, but then somehow I guess it did well enough where Image decided to make it a full-time series. So.
Oh, I forgot one thing.
What?
When I was talking about the girl running away, she does get away, and she does the Harrison Ford fugitive thing where she jumps out of the sewer pipe.
Yeah.
And goes down with the like it was identical. But the thing is, when she jumped out, that was outside. Mm-hmm. So shouldn't she burn to death? Like, she's clearly not going to,
yeah.
because she's one of our lead characters, and it's too soon. But she should be dead. Now, the one thing I think for is the water was, like, dirty. It actually looked muddy when they got outside, which, by the way, it's sewers, so that's gross. Maybe she, like, got covered in the poop water. Oh, and when she drops to the bottom, she'll be all right.
Well, maybe there's a reason she survived, huh?
Well, she's not silver, so.
Or is she?
No, because you can tell they're silver.
I know. Maybe they're doing something with that, though. I don't know. Because it did seem kind of an inconsistency, because she was sort of in the sun.
Well, yeah, but actually, they never showed her in the sun. They showed her running towards it, and they showed it falling off. But now that I think about it, I don't think they showed her falling off.
I need to pull up the comic book now for confirmation, because it's like, I don't remember this, but I'm looking at the cover of it, and I'm like, maybe that did happen?
It might have been the last page, so.
Let's pull up Eclipse issue 6. Because I'm looking at the cover of it, and it's got that scene where she's at the end of the storm drain, but I don't remember if she was near the sun. I seem to remember most of this was underground.
Well, they showed she was, yeah, you're right. She was near the storm drain. They gave you the indication.
No. Here's what happened. So she was riding the storm drain, and the storm drain was emptying out into the sun. And the gimmick was, if she just stayed in the water, eventually it would have gone out into the sun and she would have died. But she was able to grab onto a pipe and stop herself from going into the sunlight.
Okay.
So it's kind of the opposite of the fugitive scene where
she didn't want to, she didn't kill her wife. So
hey, Alex, I don't care.
That movie's great. You know, they did like a, do you know that guy was a pro wrestler?
Who?
The guy in The Fugitive, like The Fugitive. He was a pro wrestler. Dave talked about him once. He he used the nerve hold as his finish, and he played a doctor. Like, he had a doctor gimmick.
Did they talk about this on Wrestling Observer Radio, and Brian respond, I don't care!
No, because he never says bad things about Dave, because that's his money. It's bread and butter, if you will.
Well, they were arguing over that Braun Strowman finish from Monday.
They did, because Brian gets a little too upset and Dave's a little more sensible. And tells him to shut up.
As long as we're talking about folks dying in the sun, I had this book, this next book I'm going to cover, requested by a couple of listeners, Shogun Assassin on Twitter and our buddy Chris on Facebook. They've both recommended this series because it was done by Donnie, let's see if I can pronounce this right, Cates? The guy who did, what is it, it's not Goddamned, it's God Country. Which we forgot to read this week. But
I didn't forget to read it. I asked who wrote it, and I said, I don't know who that is. And I asked you to tell me what it was about, and you wouldn't tell me.
No. You misunderstood what I just said. We forgot. You forgot. Okay. Since you're asking me to explain now, you forgot to read God Country this week.
God Country came out this week?
Yes. It's on the list.
Oh, no, that's not what happened. Something different happened, but I can't talk about it.
Okay. All right, so
it's against my religion. No, that's...
That can't be it. Well, this book may be against your religion because it predominantly dealt with vampires. And that's the connection here.
Wait, we had a... Oh, God Country did?
No, Redneck.
I'm not reading that. Come on.
Well, Redneck Vampires?
That was a show. It was called True Blood. It's been done.
Well, the series seems pretty good. It's a bunch of slackjaw Texans, and they happen to be vampires.
Yeah, I never watched True. I watched two episodes of True Blood. I'm like, this is garbage. I don't want to watch.
Here's a question I got to ask, since you didn't read this book, and maybe you might know this because you have a general knowledge of more things than I do. If you're from Texas, are you considered a redneck?
Redneck isn't a descriptor of where you live. It's a description of, like, who you are as a person. Like, a lot of people say in general, like, Texas isn't actually the South.
That's what I said. So I'm like, how can you be a redneck?
Well, I mean, some parts of Texas, like Terry Funk is from Amarillo. He is a Southerner. 100%. Right? Like, I mean, you can't argue that.
I could argue because it's technically not the South.
He owns a ranch.
So? That doesn't make him a redneck.
But he is a redneck.
He's from Texas.
He brands people and has a ranch.
He's a cowboy.
Exactly. Cowboys are rednecks.
I don't know. We Let's do a define on since I'm doing this solo and you didn't read the book. I'm going to do this defined redneck. A working class white person, especially a politically reactionary one from a rural area.
Yeah, so you could be that from Iowa, from Texas, from California. You could be a redneck from anywhere.
Well, basically the premise of this series, there're zombies in Texas, not zombies, Jesus Christ. I'm getting my mythical monsters confused. Vampires in Texas, and I don't know if they're feuding with fellow vampires or
werewolves.
Not werewolves, because that'd be too obvious. But
I'm just telling you, this sounds like True Blood.
Vampire hunters. I don't know if that's the gimmick, because he did mention they were of the cloth, but it's like you never know if that means they're vampires or not. And I think it's more interesting if they're vampire hunters from a lineage, but they brought up the fact that this one was kind of scummy. So I think it's a good enough premise to the idea of, you know, you're dealing with vampire hunters and vampires in Texas. I think it's an interesting premise. And it's our boy Danny Cates from God Country, which we're a big fan of, and I'm a little disappointed you didn't read this week.
Sorry.
But it is what it is, baby. All right, since we're talking all things Image, let's talk Injection, Issue 12, writer Warren Ellis, art by Declan Shelby.
This is kind of funny. It was also kind of creepy. So in the last issue, the character whose name I can't remember because she's not Headland.
Can we get more Headland stories, please? No, I understand
no,
what he's doing.
No, I need a break. And I like this character, too. And they also mixed in the crazy redhead who didn't appear to be crazy in this. She yelled at someone for bringing her Rasputin's penis.
She said, sir, I'm offended with your penis.
and pointed out that not everything that comes from a magical person is magical. Please stop bringing me penises. Apparently they do this a lot and think it's hilarious, but she got a call from the agent on site, the one who's all techie.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, there's something going on under this this stone circle thing. There's something here. We got to bust it open. And they found an image of a spriggan. And spriggans are bad news, dude. They're related to fairies in some way.
That's the one thing I didn't know growing up until later on. I didn't realize how messed up fairies were.
Yeah, okay, so, yeah, if I can make a little tangent, the mythological dealing of fairies is, fairies are not nice, Tinkerbell, fun characters. They're mischievous, but not in, like, a good, cute way. Like, fairies see people as lesser beings.
How was it in the history of horror we have not got one that dealt with fairies?
Because it's, you have to get over the, I mean, we had the leprechaun.
But not a fairy?
No, because fairies you have to deal with more, like, fairies have the friendly connotation.
I'm just saying, just one. I don't care how rinky-dink and stupid.
I'm sure there has been one, dude. A new B-list horror movie, or D-list, I guess they'd be, comes out literally every hour. I'm not exaggerating. I used to work at a Blockbuster. These freaking things come out all the time because they cost no money to make, and you don't have to have any talent to write them, and you don't have to have any acting skill to be in them. So they come out constantly. I guarantee one of them's about a fairy.
Here's a Google fail if there ever was one. I put fairies horror movie into Google, and the first thing that comes up is Pan's Labyrinth from 2006. It's like, no, Google. Bad Google.
Pan's Labyrinth was, I mean, Pan would have been a character, but that was very much not scary fairies. That was a different thing entirely. That movie is so good.
Oh God, yes.
For so many reasons.
I'm surprised you're willing to watch it considering it's not in English.
What? I've never had that.
Oh, except when it comes to wrestling, right?
Yeah, that's wrestling. Because I don't care about their stupid flippy crap and what I don't like the style of Mexican wrestling. Like, if it was in English, I wouldn't like it more.
All right, let's bring things back to the injection review. We're taking liberties because we're recording this on the second day, so we obviously have more time now to go into the review. So now we're getting distracted.
And also, my kid's awake and he's. Keeps asking for things and
okay. Explain the influence over me then, because it's like your son's not here.
Well, I'm being more casual and less focused, so you are as well.
It's fun though. I like it.
No, it's a good time. I'm enjoying this.
As am I.
So she goes and meets with this old lady who is an expert on magical stuff. She's not really her partner, but the person who works with her, the redhead chick, she couldn't help because she was too busy dealing with Rasputin's penis. So she went to this lady who is telling her the story about basically about the Spriggans and about the history of this thing and how bad they were. But while she was talking, she's like, kind of noticing her eyes are glowing and it's getting a lot colder in this room, and I'm pretty sure something's going on here. And it was meant to be creepy, and it was, but then she's just like, okay, we quickly have to leave. And I forgot she did another cool thing. She needed a driver, like she needed a number two, so she looked at all the people they had working in the area, and she found one who had a criminal record. And she picked her because she said, I need someone who's a little morally dubious, basically, but not outright evil.
Mm.
So that's why she picked that one, which was funny. And then they went back to the thing. They dug it up, and there were a bunch of dead bodies in it. It was like a burial mound. And then the issue ended, right? Like, there was no...
Yeah, that's my one objection with this book. It's just like, it ended out of nowhere. This book is wearing out my patience.
See, I like the characters. That's the thing. Like, overall, I like all the characters. And I like how even when they're not there, like, they will reference them to remind you they exist. I like that. This is the second time we've had fucking Spriggans, though. You remember how we said it would be so interesting if, like, they went to America and then they did, like, you know, not that we have a lot, but they did, like, American mythology and they went to all these different countries. That's what they did because they can.
And we got none of that?
No. In fact, we went back to fairy shit, which we already had.
Can you explain it to me in between the – what were you just mentioning earlier before the fairies? The other name?
Spriggans?
Yeah. What's the difference between Spriggans, fairies, and pixies?
I don't know what pixies, but Spriggans would be a creature that lives in the fairy world. The fairies are from a place called the Fae, Fat Man.
Mm.
It is another dimension, but they can cross over into our dimension via forests. I don't know. It's weird. By the way, can I tell you something funny that has nothing to do with this? Well, since the show's gone off the rails.
We're done with the review. I'm fine with us going off the rails once we're done with the book.
Okay, because no, people appreciate this. This is funny. Somebody I know is not the brightest bulb.
Dave?
Like, no, you don't know this person. Like, they said they are a Hindu and a Buddhist. Which doesn't work because it's two different religions, and this person doesn't actually know anything about either religion.
Oh, they just know, I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah, they just know reincarnation, and they think that's cool. But they said, like, okay, well, I'm Hindu, so I can't eat beef. And then they were going to McDonald's one day, and she ordered a cheeseburger. And they were like, oh, hey, you can't eat that because it's beef. Oh, hamburger's not beef. Well, what? And then she went to Goodwill, like the thrift store, and she found a statue of Athena for $5 that was actually from Greece. Like it was an she claims it was an actual statue of Athena. That was smuggled out of the Greek ruins and then taken to a Goodwill in Dubuque, Iowa.
Seems legit.
This is a real person. I know interesting people.
Here's the thing. I'm trying to steer this back. If you wrote a comic book about someone like that, they'd be like, no one's that dumb.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you right now. Like, you also said Greece was a continent because it had other islands. And that one, like, I thought they, when somebody told me that, because I didn't hear it, I thought they were joking. Like, I seriously thought it was a joke. I'm like, no one actually said that ever.
I'm curious, can people interact with me? Obviously, people know, I guess people like Chris know my personal Facebook, but hit me up on Twitter, I think predominantly on Twitter, on a comic pod. Do you like when we go on tangents, or is it annoying? I kind of like that. They're kind of fun.
Are you asking me?
No, I'm asking the listener. We're now getting listeners recommending books to us. It's like, do you like when we go on tangents, or is it annoying, and should we get back to the review?
Should we focus on the comics? I think it's a necessary part of the show.
Hey, since we're talking Image, and this is going to be the end of the tangent, are you familiar with the pro wrestler Daisy Hayes?
No.
Okay.
I don't follow women's wrestling.
She looks like a tall version of Betty.
Really?
Yeah. It's like if Betty was a real person and couldn't be a three foot. What is she now? You know more your mythology than I do. So,
wait, Betty who?
Of I said Image from Rat Queens.
Oh, the halfling. She's probably about 3'5" something.
Imagine she would be like if Betty was a real person. All right, let's wrap up this week's comics. From Valiant Comics, we have Generation Zero, Issue 9, writer Fred Van Lente, art by Diego Bernard.
Wait, what?
Generation Zero.
Oh, yeah, I'm kind of over this book, too.
Yeah, this also read like a finale, too. The problem is it would be easier if we didn't have this book and Harbinger Renegades.
No, because that book, I like that book more.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's the problem. It's like, they're very similar books, and I like Renegades better.
Oh, yeah, okay. I thought you didn't like Renegades for some reason, and I thought it was, like, a lot better.
My confusion was, initially, I'm like, these books are very similar. Obviously, Harbinger deals with older people, but even though it has a couple of younger people in it, now I'm kind of over the series. It was kind of interesting at first, but this first arc got long in the tooth. We're talking 9 issues here, and they finally dealt with all the stuff that was going on.
All right. I don't remember reading this, and I know I did.
They fought the blonde girl, and they dealt with her father.
I honestly have no memory of this. I'm not convinced I read this.
Is this like God Country where you're not sure, where you didn't read it?
No, God Country I know I didn't read this week. Mm. This I think I read.
That's fine. I think we're dropping this book then, right?
Yeah, like it started out really good. And it's going to be can we get through the crossover first? Because there's a crossover coming.
Okay. I think I'm trying to figure out my problems with this book. I think the cast is too big.
I don't think the cast is too big. I think the cast they haven't done anything with them. Like, Keisha. That is her name, correct?
Yes.
Keisha Sherman. Okay, see, she's been developed because I remember her name. Mm-hmm. That means I remember the character.
And the twins I like, and then the...
Yeah, but I like them because they're kind of goofy, but we don't know anything about them.
And then the fetus, too.
The mother being controlled by the fetus, I think, is an amazing character.
I feel like I should have my stopwatch out until someone like at Marvel does a mutant that basically rips off that gimmick.
I don't know if Marvel can do that. I mean, they're not PG or anything, but it's just... That's got, you know what, no, let's keep reading this. It's just, I want to see what they do when they leave this down. The big thing in this was, Keisha revealed she has powers, apparently.
Yeah.
Which kind of came out of nowhere. Maybe given to her by the, we found out what the dad did. He has a very abused young Arab girl that he smuggled out of.
So you did read the issue now.
Is Stan? Yeah, it was. I'm remembering now. She smuggled this young Arab girl who had powers and was being like worshipped as a prophet or something. Out, and then they cut her arms and legs off so she couldn't move. Attached her to a machine because her dreams became real. They drugged her up and attached her to a machine so she would dream what they wanted, and that's how they created this town. So what this issue really did is made the dad, like, the worst bad guy ever. Like, he's tortured this young girl for money. And that's, you know, that's always bad. You don't torture people for money. You gotta torture them for something better than that.
For, like, for being dumb, and that insane Greece is a continent.
Yeah, exactly.
And beef isn't...
Greece is a continent, and hamburger isn't beef. And the thing about that I was most offended with was, I am a Buddhist and a Hindu because I believe in reincarnation. And he's like, no, that doesn't make you a Buddhist or a Hindu. That's like me saying, oh, I believe you shouldn't murder people, so I am a Christian. It doesn't work like that.
The problem is, I think there are people that say that.
I could go into a rant on people grab bagging world religions, or like the no, I'm not gonna do it.
I will be devil's advocate, and I would attempt to defend the woman in question. McDonald's hamburgers are barely beef,
but they're made with beef juice, at least at a minimum. And I've also heard that that's over like that's overdone. They actually do use meat.
Mm.
I have heard that. I don't know if it's true. I never worked at a McDonald's. I was kind of hoping Lauren would get a job at McDonald's, but by the way, guys, my wife got a job.
Huzzah!
Yeah, finally. I'm so stoked. Yeah, but the thing is, she interviewed on a Sunday or a Monday. They called her back on a Tuesday, offered her the job. She went in to fill out paperwork on like today on Wednesday, and then they're like, okay, you're starting tomorrow. And she's like, oh, okay. And like Lauren's ready, but that's fast, right? Like, all this happened in 3 days.
Yeah, it's like Solomon Grundy.
Yeah, it worked out.
Except she wasn't born on a Monday.
She wasn't born on a Monday. And hopefully she won't die on a Sunday.
She
died on a Saturday, didn't he? And he was like buried on a Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's books. Let's move on to our final segment this week. Next week's books.
Yo, you dealing with the X Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
Yo.
Oh, I know you hate the X Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me like that. Yes.
What you looking at? What you looking at? What you looking at? What you looking at?
You run around pulling stunts like that. Never in my life could I front like that. I ain't caught like
Alex, since I feel like we alienate our audience sometimes because we talk pro wrestling too much, is there a comic book equivalent to X Factor?
The Faction?
Yeah.
I remember the crew. Remember the good times. Remember the orange.
Okay, someone who was somewhat pushed but never got over.
Yeah.
The Inhumans.
That's mean, but it's absolutely true. Especially the new humans.
The new humans, except Reader. He's one of my boys.
I don't know if they were that bad, though.
No, they weren't as bad as X-Factor. Let's pick books.
All right.
Action Comics, 978.
I feel a little disingenuous by saying next week's books when it's today's books, but...
Shut up. Action Comics, 978.
Continue.
1 second. No. Blue Beetle number... Oh, we dropped Blue Beetle. Clean Room 18. Doom Patrol 6. Flash 21. The Button Part 2. Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps 19.
Whoop whoop.
Justice League of America number 5. Commandy Challenge number 4. Teen Titans number 7. Wonder Woman 21. Scrolling, scrolling, scrolling.
Scrolling, 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 scrolling. What?
No. Okay, I can't actually read.
It's okay. I did the cooking show thing, and I kind of...
No, I'm scrolling through Image, and I'm like, is there really nothing we're reading from Image?
Did we drop Black Road, or did they take a giant time off? Because I know that was Dave's big book, and with him gone, I wonder if we either dropped that, or just it's been forever since it came out, since Image.
No, you didn't want to read it anymore.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so nothing from Image. Ben Reilly, The Scarlet Spider, number 1.
With the controversial costume.
Yeah, Black Panther 13.
Can we compare his costume to a candy bar, please?
No. That's somebody else's gimmick. Deadpool versus the Punisher 2. Great Lakes Avengers number 7. Can you continue on in the list? Because I currently see the...
It's okay.
Our way, maybe I can. Hulk number 5.
Mm-hmm.
Mighty Captain Marvel number 4. Mighty Thor 18. Thanos number 6. Ultimates 2 number 6. X-Men... Whatever. X-Men number 2.
There's two X-Men books, blue and gold.
They're both coming out?
I believe so.
Okay. Two X-Men books.
Jesus.
So we can't read Britannia because we have too many books.
Okay.
And EXO Manowar number two.
So we're up to 22 books.
The books.
If you want.
But there was nothing on there that I like left off except the New Britannia, and that's a mini, and like we don't have to read it. But, like I'm sure it'll be aight.
I'm eyeballing X-Men Blue.
What?
I'm eyeballing.
No, I want to read the new X-Men books. We got to.
Yeah, but they're not really new though. It's like it's the same book. It's extraordinary and it's all new, but just a different name and different creative. Well,
which one is Blue? Is Blue the one with the kids?
Yes.
Okay, I like the kids. And the other one, it's actually different. Because they're superheroes who don't help other superheroes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I like Gold. Blue, not so much.
Yeah, well.
All right, so that's going to be the list. All right, that's going to do it for this week's show then. So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, check you guys out next week. Adios. I know that makes you mad. Is that something you can see? I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back. Oh, I know you hate that fact, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me like that. I know you hate X Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you gotta look at me like X Factor.
What you looking at?
What you looking at? What you looking at? X Factor. Yeah.
Cross chop.
Cross chop. Spin kick.
Wah.
Yeah, you beat me to it. Wah.
He did do that. Like, they were goofing on him for that, and I'm like, I don't remember him doing that. And I went back, and I was watching matches. Yeah, he for real did it. Like, sounded like a complete goof.